This is the Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Big Show on TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca. Jim Tope, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Warwicki with you as we are kicking off All-Star Weekend. We'll talk a little bit about that as it goes down in La La Land. We're going to talk a little bit of Tiger Woods, maybe some LeBron as well, some NFL. The new defensive coordinator of the Hamilton Tigercats, Mr. Jeff Reinbold, is going to join us. We'll open the phones as well. Have a six-pack for you of some form. But also getting into this big win before the All-Star break for the Winnipeg Jets. They go into Chi-Town, Chicago, and pull out a 5-3 win behind Connor Hellebuck. And a great effort by Mr. Jacob Trouba and some others. Much to get to, much to talk about. Troy Westwood, Brandon Warwicki, how are you?
It's Friday, baby. It can't be bad on a Friday, I don't think, right? Jets win on a Friday. That's a pretty good double whammy.
You know what? I was doing really good until I saw I actually just saw this on Twitter right now. And you know how Winnipeg fans complain about the Jets bias and all that sort of thing?
Yeah.
Or not the Jets bias, sorry. The Maple Leafs bias.
Okay.
Sorry.
Double,
so yeah. My fault. This tweet from Naylor and Landsberg, TSN show in the morning there. Hey, Leafs fans, would you trade Mitch Marner for Patrick Laine? It's an actual poll they have.
Oh, that is funny. Might have to. We should go at that.
Wait a minute. Would you?
No.
Yeah. Respond to the poll. Mitch Marner for Patrick Laine?
I'm good. I'll take this. I'll take the 6'5" sniper.
Compared to the 5'6" dude.
You know, yeah, it sounded a lot stupider the first time I read it, but Marner's pretty solid
Marner's
player.
Pretty good, yeah.
He's having a very good year. The rookies are doing well in Toronto and across the National Hockey League overall.
60% say no, by the way.
No. Say no. Mm-hmm. Wow. Interesting. What about for Jacob Voracek?
I don't know if that makes sense.
Jets beat the Blackhawks 5-3 last night in Chi-Town. Connor Hellebuck returns to the fold after, as Brandon told you, about 2 weeks. Comes into the game. Looked very solid, in my opinion, and came away with 38 saves on 41 shots for the victory. His fourth straight this year over the Chicago Blackhawks. Your thoughts on the game, gentlemen?
Well, heck of a start. And then it's always kind of scary and dangerous to, you know, that old stupid saying, the two-goal lead is the worst lead in hockey. That's maybe true when you're up 2-0 after a few minutes into the first, right? It's just so early that it hardly even counts. So I tweeted out yesterday, you kind of have to keep playing as if it's 0-0 because you just know there's so much left to unfold. And then the rest of it happens where Blackhawks are able to make one heck of a game out of it. Of course, they get one there mid-first on the power play and end up taking the lead at the end of the second. And I thought it looked like it was done. Like Chicago was just going to choke out pretty much any opportunity for the Jets to tie the game up. I thought the only couple of guys out there that were creating opportunities in the third for the vast majority of it was some combination of Ehlers and Laine, and it looked like Chicago was just going to wrap this up and be done with it. And I thought pretty much overwhelmed. Like the first couple of periods, Chicago dominated from a possession standpoint. Scoring chances, they won each one of those with period. But then, of course, the Kopp goal and then the Brian Little rip, and all of a sudden they, you know, head to the tarmac. Like, get out of town quick, boys. You just stole one. Get out of Dodge. It was a fantastic win, but holy smackers, they got, you know, if for any game, if they've given one game away, minus it, because they just stole one from Chicago last night.
Yeah, it was one of the weirdest games to try and break down afterwards, because at about the 4 minute and 10 second mark, I was thinking about you know, how we can rip into this team tomorrow morning. And, you know, in a span of 34 seconds, it goes from what I would assume is fire Maurice, Chevy's not doing his job, blah, 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 to, oh my gosh, huge win going into the break. The playoffs are right. Like, it's just, it was, it was funny just seeing kind of the internal battle where you go from the ultimate low to kind of the ultimate high there. But it's like they scored the first two goals in 42 seconds and then the second pair of goals in 34 seconds. So outside of that kind of 1 minute stretch there, I mean, Chicago just took it to them.
Yeah.
And you would have never have guessed that the Jets were the team that's been able to kind of be the Blackhawks' kryptonite so far over this season and then into last season as well, because they just looked like the Blackhawks of old. They were all over the Jets. The Jets couldn't make a pass.
Couldn't get out of their zone all night.
I thought it was very similar. Different styles, of course, but very similar to that San Jose game where the Sharks just, you could see them impose their will, and the Jets, you know, they didn't do a whole lot to stop it, but they were hurting themselves a lot too. You know, making just way too many. I was just blown away by the amount of turnovers that this team made. So it's like that classic scenario of, and you mentioned a quote you don't like, the two-goal game. I'll throw out a quote I don't like. You know, don't criticize the wins. I don't know, man. Like, I don't know how you don't criticize that. Like, it's great they got the win and they needed it more than anything, but, man, there wasn't a whole lot to like from the Jets for really big stretches of that game.
Well, let's compare it to what's been going on and say maybe the San Jose game where they basically had happened to them what they did to the Blackhawks last night. And do you think the Sharks, now the Sharks fully admitting are a much better team, but do you think they criticize it this way or look at it that way or, you know, and then the Anaheim game, look where they fought really hard and had some opportunities and just came up on the short end of it. And then the other two, I think you go into Chicago. I agree with you guys. I thought they carried the pace. To me, you know, watching the game, it just Chicago's smarter. Like, Chicago always has the Jets in front of them, and the Jets a lot of the times had the Blackhawks in front of them, like chasing them and going through. The neutral zone, I thought, Chicago just absolutely dominated, and the turnovers that the Jets had in the neutral zone were clear.
Startling, huh?
Well, we're clear and evident in my mind, but, they competed, they battled, they come through in the end, and I don't know, Scott Darling play bad? Like, I guess comparing it to the San Jose game and basically how they, you know, lost 4-3, albeit there was a penalty shot in there, but does it matter? Does the pace matter? Do you just need to, you know, I took tweets last night on stop the bleeding, Hellebuck stop the bleeding. I don't get that, but because that's what they were saying about Pavlik to come in. Pavlik came in, won two games, and gave Hellebuck a break. And I thought Hellebuck looked much better yesterday. I noticeably saw him play just at the top of the crease, confident, poised, moving well. I thought he looked like the break helped him. And I didn't think it would. Like, I thought that they were, and after the game, and we'll hear from him, spoke about, you know, the mental break and how he just refocused and his upper body wasn't moving as much during the game. That's what he was focusing on. Some of the things that he worked on with Wade Flaherty, but the game itself and overall play, like, clearly Chicago's evidently right now has a better team, but you found a way to win. Like, you played hard.
And it's not to me, like, the San Jose game is quite an example to use because they basically got punked in that game. I didn't think that Chicago, like, for extended periods of time, holding the puck in the Jet zone, right, toying with them, and they looked like a superior team. I didn't get that quite the vibe there for Chicago. Certainly Chicago looked like a better team, but I didn't think the Blackhawks were basically punking the Jets last night, which is what I felt San Jose did. But nonetheless, the Jets' fortune, like, and sort of suffocation is what I noticed in that third period where they just weren't giving the Jets any real opportunities to go down and try and create something until the last 5 minutes. And then all of a sudden, everything just, like, the whole world turned upside down. And I think it was Buster Rhymes with the flip mode. Flip mode's the greatest. And that's exactly what went down there at the end of the game. It was just like, holy cow, are you kidding me? Tying it up was, just to tie it was remarkable.
Yeah.
And then when they go up by one, you kind of got to shake your head and rub your eyes saying, am I dreaming? Is this real here? But I didn't think that if they lost that game 3-2, I don't think it was come in here and, oh, my God, was that a horrible game play. I thought Chicago's clipping along pretty good, and they got a dang good team. And you lost to a better team, a more mature Stanley Cup type of a team at home. It'd be an understandable situation. So I didn't think it was quite that level.
From the 27-minute mark to 42 minutes, the Jets didn't have a single shot attempt.
Yeah, they
not,
were getting
not a shot on goal,
just
something towards the net there. So, like, I don't know. I thought there was big-time struggles from the team. And I saw them commit a lot of the same mistakes they always do. Ton of penalties, a ton of dumb penalties, too. Mm-hmm. And just kind of an inability to get things going outside of their own zone. They just aren't able to transition, or at least in that game, they weren't able to transition very well from defense to offense. And you do, especially against a team like Chicago. You make a turnover going the other way. If it's not ending up in the back of your net, it's because your goalie made a great save or it hit off the post and went out.
Like, hear,
it's too dangerous.
You know, hockey stats are difficult, right? It's such a fast-flowing game and all the rest of it. But there are some times that the NHL is really out to lunch. They don't have a single Jet last night with a giveaway. Really? Really?
I don't know what to say to that. No. That's... Joel Armia literally gave the puck away on that blackout third goal, right?
Yeah.
Had the puck along the boards, took too long.
That's right.
And he did that a couple of times. Gave the puck away that literally led to the Blackhawks' third goal.
This is the other thing that you mentioned, Joel Armia, stuck out to me last night. And I took some heat for not. I'm not down on Nick Petan. I just think he's going through rookie struggles in the National Hockey League. Penalty again last night, turnover, Armia. The young guys that everybody seems to be and should be excited about on this Jets team is going through struggles this year adapting to the National Hockey League. And it's the Armias. It's the Patans. It's the, why are we talking about Kopp? Because he's scoring goals. Well, he's scoring goals, but you see the evolvement from 80 games last year to just half a season this year and just how much better he is in his own end and creating and going in nets and protecting the puck. That's one thing we really haven't. We talk about the youth on this team, but we don't talk about the struggle youth has. And Patrick Laine is a prime example. And I, you know, the first 6 weeks of the season, when I would talk about his turnover ratio or his puck battle in his own zone compared to the offensive zone, and I would get vilified for it. Patrick Laine, he's a rookie, he's 18, leave him alone. Fair enough. But those are the things that need to be coached. Those are the things that need to be taught. And even against San Jose, we saw how his defensive coverage is a little bit lacking. Now, this isn't picking on guys like that, because when veterans do it, we go, they should know better. And when rookies do it, I sit here and I go, they're learning that. So this isn't harping on them, but it is factors in the game. Armia wasn't very good last night at all. And he is one of the most exciting players on this roster, in my opinion, and I like watching him play, but he did not have a good game last night. But if you put that forward to some Jets fans on Twitter, you'll get vilified. Well, same with Nick Petan. Who's he playing with? Who's this? Turnovers have nothing to do with who you're playing with when you have the puck and you get stripped from behind.
Well, the only thing that I'll argue about that, and you can't ignore who Nick Petan's playing with right now. They're the two worst possession guys on the Jets. Chris Thorburn, over the last number of years, whoever's on his line, they struggle mightily. And why you can get a turnover if you're Nick Petan in those situations, I think, Jim, is because you look up to feed the pass and the guys aren't there. If you're playing with more talented players, they're going to be wheeling around you, offering themselves up for a pass. I think it's very difficult right now, the situation with Nick Petan, and in a lot of ways, tremendously unfair for him to have those two guys on either wing right now.
And I think it's tremendously unfair to Andrew Kopp, who played with those guys, learned a little bit, and earned the right by doing those things I'm talking about. He didn't get moved up just because he earned it over Nick Petan. And those are the struggles that 60 or 70 more games in the National Hockey League that Kopp has on him, you learn. And I understand who he's playing with, and I'm not knocking Nick Petan. The plays I'm talking about, if nobody's there for him and he has to carry the puck and it turns into a turnover, that I get. I'm talking about carrying the puck through the neutral zone and going sideways and getting it stripped off you. I'm talking about taking another penalty for the third game in a row because you're not positioned properly. You're chasing. And those are just the things. What was it yesterday? A hooking because he came out at the guy too far.
Penalty.
And
bad penalty.
That's a bad penalty, Troy. That has nothing to do with who you're playing with.
I don't disagree with the penalty.
So I'm not on Nick Petan because he's playing with bad guys and stuff. I'm just talking about these are the things that guys are going to go through that Andrew Kopp went through. And I'm not sitting here going Andrew Kopp's the greatest play ever. He's on a heater right now. But he's learned some things, and he's been given an opportunity, and he takes that. And I think that, you know, my point to this is when you look at Armia's game last night, too, we talk about youth. You know, Toronto has youth, but, you know, they're learning things, and they're getting better. These are the things that young players go through that I notice throughout the games and individuals that it just affects the team play.
Yeah, I mean, look, he's had a, I wouldn't even say last game rough one. The last two games, he's been bad. Like, you know, he hasn't been good. Now, whether that's just the struggles of playing 82 games in a season or whether that's being inexperienced, I don't know. Maybe it's a combination of both, but yeah, I was surprised too when you look at the possession charts. You know, only a group of players finished even just break even.
Yeah.
Not even above 50%, and that was the fourth line, surprisingly. Everybody else was underneath that line, which is kind of, I think, illustrates the struggles the whole team had at points, right? Like, you know, like Troy said, the line A, Ehlers' little line, was dangerous offensively, I thought, for the most part. But they get hemmed inside their own. They had a real tough time getting out of their own zone in that game.
Yeah.
And I don't know if they made the proper adjustments for the most part. But, I mean, to their credit, in the third period there, a couple of chances, boom, boom. That's simple, right? Like, it was the one time they did break out of their zone very effectively was that fourth goal. Line A makes a nice play along the boards to get it to Trouba. Trouba makes a hell of a play to shield the defender there, and Little goes to top daddy there. Bingo, wingo, game over. So, like, I guess, you know, if you're going to get a couple of chances in a game, you might as well make do with them, and they did. They did big time there. But I don't think it was the way you felt positively about their game after Anaheim, San Jose. I didn't feel the same way after that game in Chicago, oddly enough.
Yeah, and the bottom line is it's a win. It's a win on the road. It's a win against a very good team in Chicago, and they needed one, and they needed a win. And you know, it was good to see them get the win, and it was good to see Connor Hellebuck back in the net, get an opportunity to play and play well. We'll talk more about the goaltending, of course, and hear from some of the Jets at the bottom of the hour. Up next, we'll check in with Tiger Woods and how the Farmer Insurance Open went for him in his return to the PGA Tour on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN1290.
Back on the Big Show on TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca, as we're helping you kick off your weekend here on a beautiful Friday. Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki, Jim Toth. Farmers Insurance Open at Torrey Pines Golf Club in South La Jolla. La Jolla, California. Cali. Justin Rose leads 7-under, 65. Adam Hadwin, the red-hot Canadian who shot that 59 last week and finished second in an event, is sitting second at 6-under, one stroke back and a one-stroke lead on about four or five other golfers. Graham Dillette, the Canadian, tied for 8th, 4-under, 68. And I kept looking, gentlemen, and looked and looked. I know you guys were watching it yesterday, and I was in a NyQuil coma, but no Tiger Woods in the top 100. What happened? What happened? Where's Tiger? How'd he do?
Well, the tee box, he was good after 11, 1-under after 11, and just sort of plodding along, and then the train wreck hit, man, and slice off of 12-13, and then pretty much a snap hook on 14. It looked like any of us off the tee box, man, as far as the soldier golf left right thing going on. It was sad, man. It ends up plus 4, so he had it, you know, looked contained and had it within himself early on after 11, minus 1, ended up the day plus 4, and it's not very hard to envision how many times we've seen this as of late that, again, maybe today, for periods of time, he seems to be able to keep things together. You don't very often see him keep it together for 18 holes anymore, and it's interesting reading a lot of the discussion about it this morning is people saying, hey, you know, give him some time. He needs some time and all the rest of it. There wasn't a lot of that sort of thought prior to the round yesterday with all the excitement.
Gave up five strokes in the final seven holes.
Yeah. Yeah, it was unfortunate to say the least. But, you know, part of the difficulties of playing on the tour and playing 18 holes and all that sort of thing is just the mental grind of staying with it. And we've seen that a couple times with him where he plays the first, kind of like what happened yesterday, 11, 12 holes pretty solidly, and then it just kind of derails for him near the end there. So, yeah, I don't know. Like, watching him play, I mean, the yips are gone from around the green. He chipped extremely well. So, like, that part of the nightmare is over for now. Just give me this, Troy. Come on.
Okay.
But, the chipping was all right. His putting's still good. His iron game is actually really, really strong. It's just that driver. That driver is just—it's killing him. And like Troy said, he looks like a scratch golfer out there at times, where he just can't get it in the fairway. So, like, I don't know how confident you want to be, right? Where, like, yeah, if he gets the driver turned around, his game will be pretty solid. But that's a pretty big part of the game to have completely out of your arsenal. You know what I mean?
For you. He did birdie 18, so, right?
Turn it around, man. He's just setting the table the table.
So he gave up five strokes in six holes between the 11th and the 18th.
Bogey, 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 double par bogey is what he went from 12 to 17.
That's a front nine for me. Front seven. There are people going, you're worse than that. So what do you expect for him then going on here throughout the weekend?
Well, honestly, he's got a lot of work to do to make the cut. At this point in time, yeah, for sure. I would not be surprised at all if he's got plus numbers again today. I just don't until he shows it to me that he can, you know, not only hold it together but go put up some red numbers. Like I'm prepared emotionally for him to miss the cut.
Yeah, and for me, it's not even the red numbers because I know and I've seen him do it. Right, it's to avoid the other side of the ledger there. Right, like can he? Because that was first 11. He bogeyed the first hole, sure, hole jitters. But after that, pars for the next 10 holes. So it's just can even if he misses the cut and plays just a good 18, and even if he finishes one under or something, but, you know, no real meltdowns, like that's not the worst return. You know what I mean?
No, it was the second worst return.
Oh, my
just joking.
Gosh.
But
well,
you know
even if he's awful here and misses the cut, like it's the first event, do you say, okay, well, you're starting here. Do you weigh much into it? I don't weigh too much into this if he misses the cut. I weigh a lot into it if he finishes like 12 over.
I would weigh into it a lot that he ain't Tiger. That's what I'll weigh into it. And the saddest part of it to me, guys, and I think this is a huge indicator of where he's at internally. Laughing, smiling after the round, talking about it. Man, the old Tiger would have been furious, right? But and that's gone. That's forever changed. And that was part of his brilliance.
As Hustler tells me monthly about Tiger Woods, he needs to start dating again. We'll take a break and come back and hear from the Jets. They beat the Hawks 5-3. We'll hear some audio and talk more about the big win before the All-Star break for the Jets. On the Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 supports the Wild Winter Canoe Race on Louis Riel Day, February 20th, on the ice at the Forks. The Wild Canoe Race is five-person teams racing their canoes over a snow-packed 200-meter course. Proceeds will support Inclusion Winnipeg, enhancing the lives of those living with intellectual disabilities and autism. Fastest team wins a grand prize. Five all-inclusive round-trip passes for two on Via Rail and bragging rights. To sign up or for more information, visit tsn1290.ca. This is the Big Show on TSN 1290. Jim Tolt, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki. Mr. Westwood telling us about the poll that Naylor and Landsberg put out. Hey, Maple Leafs fans, would you trade Mitch Marner for Patrick Laine? Yay or nay? Some of the responses are outstanding, including from a Buffalo Bill who said no, but I would trade Matthews and a roll of hockey tape for Doughty. And then another Leafs fan replies to him saying, that would be dumb.
Marner's pretty good.
Like Winnipeg would consider that?
Do you think anyone in this city would take that trade? Not that it's outlandish, right? But does anyone here think someone, if we went to the phones with it, that would say, yeah, Marner Laine?
Well, we have one response on the poll, and I assume these are all Leafs fans. Like Winnipeg would consider that. And another one later down the line is as if Winnipeg wouldn't think about that. On Twitter, we trust. We'll check in with it later. It's good. Interesting. Winnipeg Jets beat the Chicago Blackhawks 5-3 last night. Connor Hellebuyck returned after a two-week non-start, not absence. He was working on some stuff and had a 5-3 win with the team. Made 38 saves on 41 shots. Here's head coach Paul Maurice on Mr. Connor Hellebuyck last night.
Simple game plan, obvious play. Chicago, you know, everything went to the net. Everything went to the net. And they're honestly not a team that does that, right? They're looking for seams. They're looking for an extra play because they can make those plays. So they threw everything at the net, and he looked solid, controlled the front. Really good game for him.
It's an interesting assessment saying that, you know, Chicago's a team that looks for seams, looks for things, tries to create more. And last night, Maurice felt they just threw everything at Connor Hellebuyck. And that's the thing when we sit here, I think, gentlemen, and talk about goaltending in Winnipeg, other teams scout this team and probably thought, let's throw everything at this kid. He's obviously been sat down for a reason. Let's see what we can do. And he responded really well. I really liked his game. I thought he tracked the puck a lot better, looked more solid and more confident. What'd you guys think of his game?
Would you have – I don't know what you mean by track the puck better and how you come to that, man. But nonetheless, if Toews would have scored on that goal that he slipped through his legs and just missed the net, would you have the same thought?
Well, yeah. I mean
– Really? Would you?
I'm
just saying, if Toews scores on that goal, which was all luck that he didn't score, you know, just hot puck luck right there, I just wonder.
So it's 4-4, and he's made 37 saves instead of 38?
Yeah, just with that goal. I just wonder how much.
Well, I thought he had a bad goal.
The...
I thought he let in a bad goal of the three.
Which was what?
The one from the side.
Two-on-one deep. Well, and
Was it the Schmaltz one where
yeah.
he comes out where Stewart's
where he comes
right.
out on
where Stewart's in a figure four leg lock in the corner there.
Yeah.
What was? The Schmaltz one was the one that when he gets beat high.
When he comes from the side from the boards. Yeah.
Where and why do you think that's bad? Because it's up over his shoulder again.
Short side from the side. Yeah.
Dude, you got to get over the short side thing though. I mean, I don't. There's all kinds of short Little's game winning goal was short side high. It happens all the time. Short side high happens all the time, man.
I don't mind short side goals when there's not a lot of space there. This one isn't short side to me. Trevor Kidd last night made a great thing of what I talk about with short side. He said, Connor Hellebuck's struggle is the dead-on shots. The ones he sees clearly coming down on him, Berlin, and they just wire it, either short side or far side, and he sees it the whole way. That's what he's been struggling with, according to Trevor Kidd. Yesterday, I didn't like that goal because it's short side, but he comes out from the side. Like, if you're hugging the post and he passes it in front, somebody beats you, or he comes around and beats you, fine. But to come from the side wall...
You can't hug the post there, man. You can't sit there and hug the post or else you give way too much to the other side of the net. Nonetheless, I thought the third goal was the one that where there was just interesting confusion. And, of course, that's the Armia giveaway, and then two-on-one, and it goes really deep with Kiro. Is that how I say his name?
Kiro.
Yeah. And it's interesting because it's so deep that Hellebuyck goes to a reverse VH on that play instead of butterfly. Like, it was really neat because he went there on that play. He goes to hug the post because of how deep Kiro is. And while he's – you can tell that he to me, in his brain, was like – deciding reverse VH or butterfly and sort of went to the reverse VH very late in it and opened up his five hole for a bit, and Kiro was able to find it there. But right there, I thought that was a technical type goal, but very interesting because of how deep that 2-on-1 was able to come. You don't see many goalies make the decision to go reverse VH to a shooter like that instead of going butterfly. It was that one I found very interesting. But by and large, I thought he played well enough, right? Like, he wasn't outstanding, but played well enough.
Did you see an improvement of what you've been witnessing?
No. I don't – no noticeable improvement to me. I've talked a bunch about those six goals in the 13 shots where there was just some remarkable things that occurred there with what I thought was one soft goal there. But to me, that looked like the same guy that I've seen all year.
Yeah, I thought it was, hopefully the Montreal-Arizona back-to-back was just the aberration there, because I agree. That's what he looked like before that during the season, where he's solid. There's a couple goals where I don't think they're bad goals, but I think they fall into the category of, would you like a save there? Like, mm-hmm. yeah, maybe. You know what I mean? Like, he was just good. He was good last night. He did enough to get the team the win. He made some big saves in the first period, I thought. Got very, very, very lucky on the Taves play there, where I don't know how many times you beat a goalie five hole, mm-hmm. only to find it slide its way outside the post there. But
yeah. That's kind of Taves' luck too, a little bit this year, right?
Yeah, I thought he was fine. Nothing outstanding.
Any improvement in his play?
Nothing that really jumped out to me. I know he mentioned that he thought his upper body was moving less, maybe a little bit less frenetic in the net, but I don't know. His style kind of just transfers over from game to game, right? Where there shouldn't be a lot of movement, and he just kind of stays within the blue paint, up nearish the top of the paint, and I don't know. I just thought it was the same Hellebuck. If you would have told me that was a game from November 15th, I would have said, yeah, that's kind of how he's been this year, right? Makes some good saves, lets in some meh ones, but overall, is pretty solid for you.
To me, when I watch him, and I thought this early on when I saw him, and I've always thought about this about Roberto Luongo, who is a technician. Roberto Luongo, to me, has always been, you could almost put a cardboard cutout of where he's going to be at the shot. And it's if the shooter beats him, he beats him. But Luongo's going to be in the right spot. And in a lot of ways, for me, outside of a couple situations, and of course in his youth, he's going to get things settled and find, make his positioning that much more sound. But by and large, I see a lot of the same type of goaltending by Connor Hellebuyck, where you know where it's going to be, man. It's going to be over one of those two shoulders. Anything other than that is going to be a rarity with him, like, for instance, with the screen on the Keith goal. But by and large, he's always where he's supposed to be, and it's going to come down to if the shooter can beat him. That's simple.
It's weird because I don't see him. I think that's where he struggles, is not being positioned well, and that's why shooters beat him. And that's what Trevor Kidd was sort of saying last night too, that he's just not positioned well on the dead-on shots, and that's what Trevor was saying last night was his weakness, or what he was struggling with was the dead-on shots where he's giving up too much space on the angles.
Well, we can talk to Trevor about that a little bit at 7, but the fact of the matter is, very similar to the little game-winning goal, and even like when that guy walks out on that second goal on him, he's in a bit of a situation there, because you can't overcommit and come out and be all that aggressive when you've got a guy standing on your doorstep, right? Like he's dealing with a frenetic, moving, chaotic type situation in front of him, so he can't be all that aggressive there. But that over the top shoulder, man, that's where guys get beat. That is the window over each shoulder. That's the window for NHL shooters right now.
What did Connor Hellebuyck think? Here's his comments after the game on what he felt the most important change was in his game with his downtime.
I worked on the things that I need to work on. Got my mind right. Got a little more relaxed. I don't know if you can notice it, but I can definitely feel it. I'm definitely more calm in my upper body and really got back to my game. I'm not trying to do too much. Not trying to do other people's jobs. Just playing my game.
Now, let me say this, okay? There is a huge possibility he thinks a lot of the question coming at him is a bunch of crap, and he's playing the same way. And he was playing decent before. He got yanked for this period, and now he's back in this position. But you got to say the right things here. But I think deep down inside of him, he could be sitting or standing there answering these questions, go, man, I'm playing basically the same way. There's not really much different in my game. How much, really, in reality, you're not going to be changing very much over that time frame.
I don't take that from his comments at all. Having talked to Connor Hellebuyck, having seen most of his interviews, that was... I thought he was more relaxed. I thought he was more, compared to 2 weeks ago when he says, I'm confident, and he was abrupt and he was angry with the media. I didn't buy that at all. I thought he was upset and I thought he was frustrated. And those comments last night, I thought he was touching on the fact of those are the things he actually worked on. And I think it was mental. I think it was more mental than anything. in my mind.
Could, I don't know. Like, I don't know what's going on in his head. So if he says it was mental, then I guess so. Like, I'm not going to try and dissect what's going on in Hellebuck's head. But, hey, did it help him? Did it hurt him? Like, it's something we'll never really know, right? Because he could have came in against Arizona and then played somewhat. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's for me, the technical issues, they weren't insanely glaring before that. It's just, we just never really got the chance to see him struggle over a prolonged period of time when it was just those two games. If it was something like a Jake Allen situation where he's getting pulled basically every time you throw him out there, then yeah, you have some sort of major issue that you have to work with there. But it's like, I don't really want to commit either way necessarily, just because it was those two periods and this was his first chance coming back out of it. And he had shown prior to those games that when he had struggled the night before, he comes back and he gave you a really solid effort the next game. So I don't want to say one way or the other exactly what his issues were.
Yeah, and I thought he played well. I thought I just thought he looked a little more steady and strong, position wise. Here's also his thoughts on the 18 shots he faced in the first period, and if he liked that, having been off for about 2 weeks or not having a start in about 2 weeks.
Oh, I mean, we won, so I'm going to take the 18 shots, but I don't really think it really mattered. I'm fresh, and I've been practicing a while, so I'm pretty hungry to play, and I think I was just had the nerves going again, which it's been a while for that. And I think that kind of drove it a little bit.
You know, can I say on that second goal there where you see, who's the goal scorer on that second goal?
Schmaltz.
Was it Schmaltz?
Yeah.
Okay. And the way he comes out from the corner, you know, Stewie's got a guy. Stewie's obviously occupied there and tied up, right? But you've got Enstrom's a little bit high. He comes crashing down. I think it's Roosevelt that he ends up taking in the crease, right? And he's standing, like, there's no way in the world that some form of communication shouldn't be happening between Enstrom and Postman there, because Postman's standing in front of the net as well. So now you've got both the Jets defensemen occupying one guy in front of the net. Laine's unsure of what to do. It looks like he's concerned in covering the point pass. But the glaring defensive breakdown and the confusion that happens in the Jet zone leads to a guy walking out all alone with all kinds of time and space. And any shooter in the NHL would give him that much time and space, for crying out loud. You're really leaving your goalie out to dry again. But again, just a ridiculous, glaring error in the defensive zone for the Jets.
What did you guys think about that play with Stewart along the boards?
I thought it was a penalty.
Not on Stewart.
No, on,
yeah, so did
absolutely
I.
On Kruger,
you
right?
Call a penalty.
Yeah, because so and like right away, I thought it was fine. Right, they're tied up, whatever. But then the puck comes back towards Stewart, and he's clearly trying to make a move towards the puck. The ref's watching him. Stewart's, I mean, he doesn't know what to do, so
totally.
he starts crushing the guy in the back because he can't get out. I couldn't believe, and especially when it's right in front of the official like that.
The only thing I'll say, Wicks, is that I thought if Stewie, like, I'm watching it right now, if he made more of an effort to get up, then
guess.
I think you could probably extract a penalty from it. But he looked to me like, I thought it during the game and even watching now, that he was okay with occupying a guy and basically sitting on a guy as well. It was an interesting relationship there for a couple seconds.
Yeah, it was. And then, you know, the whole play, I understand Stewart's frustration too, because the whole play started by the puck getting caught up in the linesman, so he can't play it, so that keeps it in the zone. But that happens. But then the whole play itself was interesting. Finally, here's Connor Hellebuck on being 4-0 versus the Chicago Blackhawks this year.
You know what? These are huge points, and you know it doesn't matter what team we're playing. We need to continue to grow our team and continue to get points. And I think these two are going to help spring us into this after post All-Star break.
We'll hear from more on Paul Maurice as well as we continue to break down a 5-3 win between the Jets and the Blackhawks. But up next, can we talk some NBA? I don't like what's going on with LeBron. You guys know who LeBron is?
Rings a bell.
Let's talk about it next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Welcome back to the Big Show on TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca. Trevor Kidd is going to join us at 7 a.m. Shane Knighty, 7:30. Lots more Jets talk. NHL news and notes. It is All-Star Weekend coming up. And, of course, the trade rumors are amping up. And the newly appointed defensive coordinator of the Hamilton Tiger Cats, Jeff Reinbold, joins us as well. Gentlemen, I want to talk some NBA because it's always, we don't do a lot of NBA talk here. I know we're fans of it, the game, and don't pay that close attention to it other than Wicks. I know you do daily. I do probably weekly. You watch a lot of NBA?
I don't watch a lot of it, but follow it daily, man.
The drama in the National Basketball Association is outstanding if you like drama, which I don't. Drama-free since 73. Anyway, LeBron James called out the franchise saying they need to improve. Did it publicly, and he's upset that they're not bringing in better players. Mike and Mike, before our show here every weekday morning, has been talking extensively about this, and I thought they made the great point of Kevin Love is a much better player than what his role is on the Cavs, and he eats a lot of his skill and talent to play the role that they need him to play on the Cavaliers. LeBron wants him to spend more. They're the highest spending team ever, and what he's basically doing is they're 2-6, I believe, in their last eight games prior to last night. They are struggling. And he sees what Golden State's doing, everybody else, and he wants more. And the panel on TNT sounded like we do some days, to be honest. They were yelling at each other, Shaq O'Neal and Charles Barkley and Kenny Anderson, about the debate of LeBron. And Charles's point is, does he not want to compete? You're the defending national basketball championships. You're complaining publicly about not the team not spending more money going getting more players. They went and got Kyle Korver. What do you want from this team that's basically given you everything you've ever asked for and helped you win a title? Shaq's point is, to Barkley, you've never won back-to-back. He's never won. But you don't know what it's like to go back-to-back, and he's seen what the other teams are doing, and he understands what it's like to repeat as a champion and doesn't think the franchise is doing enough to do it. The question is, what do you think of LeBron, like, doing this publicly and not privately, and the overall sentiment of what he's doing, like, give me more again?
Well, first of all, I think the whole Charles, and I love Charles Barkley, but how are you going to talk about LeBron James not being willing or not wanting to compete, man? He's played 45 minutes in two of the last three Cavs games, for Pete's sake, and he's out there always working his ass off. How you can say that? And Shaq took great offense to that specific statement. And then, part of the agreement with the Cavs ownership was that they would do whatever necessary and basically feed LeBron the personnel necessary to go win championships. And right now, when you look at the supporting cast, sure, and it used to be big three was all you need, right? But that ain't the world anymore, man. That ain't where the NBA is at right now, especially when you look at going to grab a championship. And I think J.R. Smith is injured right now, right? So right. They're missing some of those sort of support players within their roster. And don't think for a second that a guy like LeBron, when you have a guy who's typically pretty savvy and smart and they go public with something like this, don't think for a second there hasn't been extensive conversation privately trying to appeal to the owner. Now he's coming out and sharing this if they're sitting on their hands and all the rest of it. So it is an interesting situation.
Yeah. I mean, this is what LeBron does, right? He's done it basically every year the past 4 or 5 years where he cracks the whip at some point during the regular season. The team's struggling and they kind of go into a bit of a tailspin. They'll probably come back, win, I don't know, 12 and 13 and clinch the first seed sometime in early March.
Win the East.
Right, yeah. Like, it's what I don't really put a whole lot of stock in this at all, to be totally honest with you. I don't even know if he wants more players brought in. I think it's just kind of a ploy. He's very smart, and he's, like Troy said, very savvy about this whole situation. And, you know, he goes to the media once in a while, and when he does, they snap out of it, and they get ready. And I think it's in a response more so to how they played against Golden State when they lost by, 30-plus points in Oakland a few weeks ago. Because he knows that the regular season doesn't matter, but they have to be ready for certain pockets of the season, and they weren't good enough in that game.
Yeah, it's an interesting situation, and again, just adds to the whole fever that comes when the NBA playoffs get going. And if the Cavs actually do make any more changes than they already have. We'll take a break. When we come back, Trevor Kidd's going to join us on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 is proud to support the ALS Society's Manitoba Social Saturday, February the 4th at Winnaqua Community Center. Get ready for great music, dancing, and amazing prizes. You can also enjoy the opportunity to party the night away with the ALS community. Advance tickets are on sale now from the ALS Society of Manitoba. More event details are online at alsmb.ca. Jim Telf, Troy Westwood, Brandon Rowicki with you on this Friday morning. Kicking off your weekend on The Big Show, TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. And our next segment is brought to you by United Therapies Strive. And we're going to talk with former NHL goaltender and, of course, current TSN 1290 Jets analyst and hockey analyst, Mr. Trevor Kidd. Trevor, how are you today?
Morning, fellas.
Up early.
Yeah, a little bit. Quick turnaround.
thanks for waking up early for us, brother.
All good.
Yeah. A quick turnaround. That's right. Yes. Let's get to it. I like it. Thanks for joining us today. We want to talk some hockey with you, of course, but also want to talk about the Manitoba Blizzard High School soccer program, and some seniors are graduating. First of all, give us some background on this program. I know you're heavily involved in it. It's got some great news as it continues to evolve, especially this year with some of its graduates, but let us know a little bit about the Blizzard program.
Yeah. Thanks, guys. I have three girls, that, spending my time in Carolina and Florida of the world, when they were young, they became soccer players and, not hockey players. So it, started quite some time ago, when I retired back from, Toronto, moved back to Winnipeg here, call home. I was fortunate enough to meet, a guy by the name of Jim Zinko. And, with that, and some of, my experiences, playing sport high level, just, trying to realize some of the opportunities that are available in the soccer world, and some of that using, I guess, soccer as a platform to realize some of the opportunities that can be afforded to soccer players in receiving some, post-secondary education, some, going down south, whether it be, NCAA that we can talk about, or CIS. There's lots of opportunities for soccer players in regards to receiving some help with the pocketbook as girls and guys, boys look to further their education after high school. And we started a program about 6-7 years ago called the Manitoba Blizzard, and it's simply that we educate families on these opportunities that are available both here locally and down south. And with that, put, these families and these players in front of, coaches that are looking to bring kids into their programs. And it's just, again, it's an opportunity to try and use soccer as a platform to realize some of these opportunities, post-secondary education. And it's taken some legs. We're just about 50 players now, and this graduating class that you mentioned is going to put us over the $3 million mark in scholarship money afforded to these families. So it's a lot of fun. We do it. It's great empowering these families and players and parents to go after some of these opportunities that are available to them. And they put a lot of hard work into the game of soccer, and it starts so young when they're 9-10 years old, and go through all those trials and tribulations playing youth soccer. And it's always fun on signing day to see proud parents and moms and dads, and moms having a tear and proud dads, and you put in the coaches and all these players play for clubs here locally, and there's a lot of hard work that's put in getting to this point. So it's a great program. It's something that is new, and again, it we talk about hockey a lot. There's in a lot of sports, whether that be basketball or volleyball, and we're talking here about soccer, there's a lot of opportunity to try and capture some benefits in regards to playing a sport that you love to play.
Yeah, Kidder, this is standing ovation worthy to me, what you and Jim are doing here. And like you said, when you're talking about 47 players that have gone on to secure university with the help of what you guys are doing, and to have 9 girls graduating as a part of the Blizzard program to be moving on to scholarships, I know how important for me as a kid that didn't have a bunch of direction to get that athletic scholarship and a chance to go and play a sport and get your education at the same time. All parents love that possibility, that notion of their child playing a sport that they love and also at the same time getting that insurance of the education, man. I just tip my hat so big time to you. All the work you're doing along with the assistance of Manitoba Soccer Association working together, man, and all the work you've done in a general sense. I know you got 2 girls in the NCAA. It's just, Kidder, this is big time awesome stuff, the impact that you're making on these girls and on their families.
No, I appreciate that, Wesley. It's important. A lot of long hours, volunteer hours, if you want to say, but boy, it's sure worth it when, talking with the parents and going through the processes with them really makes it worthwhile.
You even drive the bus once in a while, I understand.
Always drive the bus. Jeez, that's funny.
We're talking with Trevor Kidd, of course, a former NHL goaltender, our current Jets analyst here on TSN 1290, about the Manitoba Blizzard soccer program we got. So 9 Manitobans out of this program are getting scholarships this year, eh, Trevor?
Yeah, there's 9 this year. We're pushing 50 now, going through it. Our first graduating class going back, 4 years ago, are now just coming out of school and coming back to Winnipeg or Manitoba. And, it's great. One of our visions is for all the, much like a hockey team, is to recognize the opportunities, benefits that are given through and to them through education and soccer, and hopefully return back to their communities when they're done and become positive role models. So we're seeing some of our first graduates now graduate from their university, a couple of them down south and obviously here locally and across Canada. So it's great that a lot of them are coming back to their communities here, coming back to Winnipeg and becoming, again, role models, whether it be coaches or into the workforce.
Kidder, we're still waiting to be able to confirm that none of the Jets were arrested as they were escaping Chicago yesterday, but a little bit of a robbery act last night, huh?
Goodness sakes. There's no way I would have predicted that or put any money down on that. It was, with Hellebuck getting in there, getting back, getting the opportunity to go back to the Nets, he had a solid game. Little is continuing his magic right now on the offensive side. I liked Liney. Game against San Jose, he seemed to have his foot on the brake the entire game. He looked like he was back to his normal self. And, boy, second period was rough again for them last night. But to come back, Chicago 16-1-1 when having the lead after the second period, you pretty much thought you could nail that in and this game was over. But I have to give the Jets a ton of credit. They came back in this one. And keeping pace. I know Rick battled with the games played and the playoff race, but with all that being said, they're 3 points. They're still in the race. They're still sniffing around, hanging around, and big game for them last night.
What's your assessment on Connor Hellebuck's game coming into last night, and then did you see anything specifically different from him that he got a couple weeks off?
You know what? I've been talking about just, the reset, the refresh, the mindset, just taking a break. And if anything, was just having Wade Flaherty talk to him and just trust his ability to go out there and play well. And certainly the 45 minutes before, the half an hour after, and working through maybe some repetition of the good things that he needs to play well. But to me, it was all about just the space between the ears. And it was interesting to hear him talk or his post-game clip on how he felt played and what were some of the signs he worked on during his break. And the biggest thing was is he mentioned being more relaxed out there, and it was a great time to just reset the mind. And I think if anything, that was it. When you look at the goals that were going in on him prior to kind of just taking a sidestep. They were just shots that were coming down the wing. They weren't a whole bunch of things in tight or a bunch of lateral movement. It was, to me, it was just confidence and trust in your ability to go out there and play well as a young guy. And last night was a good start in some of that. It's going to be he's going to have the microscope on him here as we go down the stretch. Obviously, the conversation now has been started about, what is this team going to do in the off season? Are they going to go out and buy that $5 million guy and go into next season with maybe a different look in goaltending? Or will it be a Connor Hellebuyck and maybe a cheaper type veteran guy? But I guess notice has been served, and last night was a good start for him and getting back in the net.
30 games left, Kidder, for this season. And boy, to have a crystal ball and have an understanding of what the Jets might accomplish during that time frame, what do you think is fair to expect from this group for these final 30 games?
Oh, boy, good question. You can talk about different things up and down the lineup and at different moments in time. To me, it's just putting it all together. I mean, you look at last night and the offensive and they're getting what they're getting out of those top two lines when things are clicking. There's magic to it. We've talked about third line play and having the depth of your bottom six, and that third line has done wonders here in the last week. I mean, that Armia, Mathias, and Lowry can create a career out of being that third line in the NHL. You look at the defense, the back, the four. I mean, Morrissey, if it wasn't for Laine, he'd be our Calder candidate. I think Buff has had his moments. Trouba, I think, has come in and played, has done great with all the stuff that happened in training camp and the contract. To me, it's putting it all together and playing with consistency. What would they do with Stafford? What would they do with Pro? I mean, Pro steps out, Kopp steps up to that first line, and he's played unbelievable. So, to me, it's just putting this all together and playing with consistency and trying to learn. Again, when you start, if the team at ever at some point here puts together this winning streak that we're talking about, and we've seen a lot of these teams that are in the playoff race put them together, if they could ever put the game together where they can go at it and talk about playing a stretch of 5 to 10 games where you see these moments of brilliance, here and there, to me, what's left in the 30 games is just putting this all together consistently.
Trevor, we appreciate your time as always. Thanks for doing this. And once again, my man, congratulations to all the graduates and all the players coming out of the Blizzard program. It's a great, great event, great stuff, great program.
I appreciate you guys wanting to talk about that for a few minutes. Thanks again.
Thanks so much, brother. Take care.
Trevor Kidd, once again, our Jets analyst and former NHL goaltender, joining us today on The Big Show. We'll take a break and we'll hear more from Paul Maurice on the big 5-3 win for the Jets in Chicago on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 is proud to be a media sponsor of the 2017 Canada Summer Games. All eyes will be on our city of Winnipeg this summer as thousands of athletes from across Canada come to compete in 16 sports and over 250 events. The 50th anniversary of the Canada Summer Games will also welcome over 20,000 visitors, making it an event you won't want to miss. Volunteer registration is now open. To stay up to date on event details, ticket offers, and much more, you can visit both 2017canadagames.ca and tsn1290.ca. This is The Big Show on TSN 1290. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Rowicki with you. In our previous segment with Trevor Kidd was brought to you by United Therapy Strive. If you've been injured at work, in an accident, or by playing your favorite sport, United Therapy Strive can help you live life the way you want. Go to strivetraining.ca. The Winnipeg Jets get a 5-3 victory on the road over the Chicago Blackhawks. Come from behind in the third period. Blackhawks, is that at home or just on the season? 1-16-1 or 16-1-1?
When
trailing in the
when,
third.
When leading,
when leading in the third.
I think that's overall,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Overall, not just the season. Interesting, impressive nonetheless. The Winnipeg Jets, gentlemen, in the Central Division this year are 11-4-1. And they're 4-0 against the Chicago Blackhawks. Mm-hmm. And remember we said the division will kill this team. And it's the rest of the league. So let's just play division games and just move forward, Bettman. What is wrong with you? Here's head coach Paul Maurice on the win itself.
This is a tough stretch of hockey that we just went through. You know, when you look at four games in six nights with the St. Louis and Anaheim, there was a big cost to those. So five guys out of your lineup, and you come in a little low on gas and stay with it mentally. Just stay in the fight, give yourself a chance to win. And then there's different people that were very responsible. It's a really big, big win for our team.
Big win for the team. Paul Maurice also talked about which players stood out for him.
Connor was really good. Great. The save on Taves is the difference in us being able to come back or not. And, you know, weather in the storm. Jake Trouba, real strong tonight. Josh Morrissey on the back end. Patty Laine looked right tonight. Not that he wasn't. Well, he wasn't. He was back to looking normal tonight. So they had some good looks.
There's a cosmic debate to be had there. Is it a save if it gets through your five hole? Like, is that a save, right? It's fortunate there. But I think a worthy point that he makes. We looked at the stretch, right, after Arizona. We got the Blues, Ducks, Sharks, Blackhawks. That's a nasty group of teams there. Come out of it somewhat unscathed, 500, right, to take 4 points out of that. And now you continue on and play five consecutive games all against central opponents. Right, so when you're talking about moving up and down and where you're gonna, if you still have a playoff dream, these next five games will play a huge role in possibly accomplishing that or failing miserably.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. And yeah, you're right too, right? Because that's still what bothers me about those two back-to-backs at home was that they, you know, like you could look at it if they were in a playoff spot and you split those four games. Yeah, you know, like that, we can take that pretty solid.
But they can't make up room.
They couldn't afford to, and they deserved more in those two home games. So I guess you could say that the Chicago win last night makes up for not grabbing any points in either of those two games. But that's just the reality of the situation where, like, 2-2 isn't anywhere near good enough. They had to go 3-1 there, and it just puts even more pressure on them. Like you said, Troy, if you have playoff hopes for the team here, what is it, next five against the Central?
Yeah.
Got to go 4-1.
And you're running out of tick, right? Like, yeah. You got 30 games now. So if you're running out of time to make a room, running out of real estate.
As Clint Eastwood said in the movie Unforgiven, deserves got nothing to do with it.
As he gives us a raised eyebrow, Eastwood-esque type of a stare.
Listening to Rick Ralph in the postgame show last night with Trevor Kidd, he broke it down and said mathematically what it looks like for the Jets. There's 30 games to go, so they have to win two out of every three games.
Rick broke it down mathematically? That's weird. He never does
maritime
that.
Math, too. So basically what they need to do is go win two out of every three games 10 times down the stretch.
Okay.
So you avoid that three-game win
streak.
That's what I said.
You don't let it. Hey, as long as they don't
pointed it out
until they get to the point where they have to win three in a row.
That's Manitoba.
They got
math.
A chance.
I said
Manitoba
a long time ago.
Right there.
People are talking about this three games in a row. I was like, if you win two, lose one, anybody will take that, right? So there you go, boys.
What this does in the standings, gentlemen, actually, is Calgary, with their win over Ottawa after being berated by their head coach Glenn Gullickson, moves back into the wild card spot. Winnipeg sits with 50 points in 52 games now going into the All-Star break. 23 wins, 25 losses, 23, 25, and 4. They sit in 12th, tied with Dallas, who has played two less games. Vancouver has up by 2 points. LA is up by 2 points. And Vancouver has 2 points in hand. LA has three games in hand. Sorry, I should say three games. And, of course, in the wild card picture in the West, Calgary has moved back into it over LA and Vancouver with 53 points. And Winnipeg has 50. So still 3 points back of that last wild card spot. Both Calgary and Winnipeg have played 52 games. But LA, Vancouver, and Dallas are ahead of Winnipeg, and two teams have two games in hand, and the LA Kings have three games in hand on the Jets. We'll talk about the 5-3 win with Jets analyst Mr. Shane Knighty next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
the iHeartRadio app. Stream us on the iHeartRadio app on all your favorite devices, or get a customized playlist to suit your mood or activity. Your music, your station's always free. Download the iHeartRadio app today and stream on. This is The Big Show on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. Continuing to talk about that 5-3 win by the Winnipeg Jets over the Chicago Blackhawks in Chi-Town last night. They now, at the All-Star break, have 50 points in 52 games, 30 games left on the regular season for the Winnipeg Jets. They are 3 points back of the second wild card spot against Calgary, who took it over again last night with a win in Ottawa in overtime. They have 53 points. The Jets have 50. Dallas has 50 points. They're ahead of the Jets. Vancouver is 52, and LA is 52. And once again, both Vancouver and Dallas have 2 games in hand. The LA Kings have 3 games on hand, and the Calgary Flames have played the same amount of games as the Winnipeg Jets at the All-Star break with 52. Jim Tolth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki with you as, again, we talk about the 5-3 win for the Jets over the Blackhawks, and we do it with a Stanley Cup champion and, of course, a Jets analyst on TSN 3 and right here on TSN 1290. Mr. Shane Knighty, good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for joining us today, as always, and we'll just start with a big come-from-behind win in Chicago against the Blackhawks. Whether it's the Jets or not, that doesn't happen very often to the Blackhawks.
No, Winnipeg certainly has their number this season. The other games, maybe they've been able to execute a little bit better, but it's all about the end results. So, the Jets, they had a real good start to that game and a real good finish. They found a way to keep it close, to stay within it. There were some good things there. The second period was a little rough. They did look tired. They, got away from their game, but there wasn't panic like we've seen before where they start to really push. Yeah, they'd be under siege, but the big-time mistakes weren't as glaring, which is a positive. And the main positive is the final score of the win and also Connor Hellebuyck getting back in net and being part of that win.
Sheriff, there was a time after, I think you could probably draw or have a starting point at the line A hit in Buffalo, and then there was a little while there where things were really looking shaky and kind of came off the rails for a bit, and it looks like the team has got it back in for the most part. Your thoughts on what your expectations are here for this group, any steps to be taken forward over the last 30 games?
I think just the consistency in their game, and I'm not, saying for them to make playoffs, for them not, whatever. I'm looking for consistency in their game. And we've seen that here over the last little stretch. Yeah, there's been some losses, but they've played well. I honestly think they probably better 60-minute games against Anaheim than San Jose. There was just some glaring mistakes that cost them, but they didn't give up as much as maybe they did against Chicago. So, but they've been playing better. And the panic in their game when it was going south, goal against would just turn into a huge matter and they couldn't find their way and things would come off the rails. As you were saying, they try to push the offense, force things. Now they've stuck with the game plan, and that's what I want to see going forward. Continued progress in the right direction. The young guys continuing to, take big parts of this team. And, Nikolaj Ehlers being a driver, at 20 years old. Patrick Laine, Mark Scheifele, Josh Morrissey continuing to grow. Connor Hellebuyck, really taking that step forward. And health. You want to see this team. I'd like to see this team healthy for a stretch to really get a good idea of what they can look like. And then you never know. They need a fantastic run here. At some point in these final 30, if they want to look at being a playoff team.
Shane, what did you notice, if anything, different from Connor Hellebuyck?
Oh, I think I don't know if he planned to have 17 saves in that first period. But to me, he looked better. It just confidence, positioning. When he made a save, he looked like he was moving to make that save, and he looked right, and it looks like someone who's put the work in, gotten the shots, and you could see the confidence grow as it went on. So just important, more than anything, getting the win. That to me, is what he needed, along with making some saves, feeling the puck, moving seeing through traffic, you know, getting back in the battle. And thought he did a good job of that, and that's what they need. He's gonna get a chance here to play, probably coming right out of the break, at least I'd imagine, and we'll see how he feels. He said he felt a lot better, and that's all you can ask for right now.
Sheriff, the Jets were having a heck of a time exiting their defensive zone and maintaining puck possession through the neutral zone when they did last night. Why were they struggling to the degree that they were, and how much of that was what Chicago was doing to impose their will?
Well, you got to credit Chicago. Good sticks, quick on the puck. And that mainly happened in the second. And it was just slow. You stopped moving your feet, and, you know, they did look like a tired team. Blake Wheeler, to me, just looks like this break came at the right time. A lot of those guys have played big minutes, and, you know, Paul Maurice, you mentioned, go back to when, you know, Wheeler played over 27 minutes, and that's huge ice time for a forward that plays at the pace he does. But that said, you start playing slow against a team like Chicago. You don't make the smart play. And slow, and not only just their foot speed, but their decision-making, their passes were off, and it's tough to play against a good team when you're like that. They're going to jump on it, and that's what Chicago did. And that's why they were able to grab that lead in the second period. But, you know, Winnipeg didn't come out in the third and really try to force the offense. And both finding ways to win. And not every game is going to look right. There's been games that they've deserved better, and they're able to get a win in this one, in which there was a stretch in the second, and even that second half of the first that got away from them, but kept it close and scored when it was needed.
TSN 3 Jets analyst, and right here on TSN 1290, Shane Knighty joining us today on the big show, TSN 1290, with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki. Shane, going back to training camp, you know, Sean Matthias was signed in the offseason and brought in, and a lot of people wondering what role he'd play, where he'd be at, the $2 million a year, is it worth it, everything else, and especially with the youth movement that was on. But I've been pretty impressed with what he's been able to get done. 7 goals, 27 games, 9 points. What do you feel his role is, and how nice of a fit has he been?
I think he's been a real good fit for that line, and yeah, you mentioned the goal. I think he could have easily double the goals with the chances he's had. So they've been able to generate chances. I think a big, strong body that skates well. I didn't know he skated that well. I think that's maybe the biggest surprise I've seen from his game, is he's got speed for a big man. And he's strong on the puck, you know, below that goal line. Him and Adam Lowry, really two big, strong men that can, you know, cycle, protect the puck, make plays in around the net. And we know Joel Armia, good time for a break for him. It's been a tough stretch here for him, and I think they'd like to see him get back to that game he had earlier in the year. But, yeah, Sean Matthias has been a good compliment to this team. I think on the penalty kill, just a veteran presence. And when you can bring that to play, he's playing with a couple of young guys in Lowry and Armia. He brings some experience to the team, and he's been able to find the back of the net. So it's been good for the Jets because, yeah, I wasn't quite sure what we'd see from Matthias, but I've really liked it. I think he could easily have 15 goals at this point with the chances he's had. So, you know, tough to get an injury on a new team early in the year, but he's been able to come back from it and be a nice addition.
Sheriff, we don't often talk to you about other teams, but just to take a look at the Central and seeing Minnesota sitting on top of the division, not sure, everyone wondered how much the Boudreau effect would impact that team, but how surprised are you with the level that they're at?
I think I am surprised, yeah. It's just, you know, I don't know how much, there's been a, you know, slight change, but it's a group of guys that have played together and come in, and Bruce Boudreau's done a nice job of, you know, little tweaks here and there to their game that, you know, have been effective, and I think Eric Staal has been a big addition that I don't think I saw that impact from him being as great as it is. So you know what, they've come in, they've played well, and Devan Dubnyk, just that trade, and I remember questioning when he went after Dubnyk was in Edmonton and then down in Arizona, and I think he naturally had some time, so you're starting to wonder, is this, you know, Devan Dubnyk, the Wild picking him up and kind of needed a goalie at that time, and boy, that to me has been the number one thing for that organization and for that team even this year. The goaltending they've gotten from him has been outstanding, and Good show of why you have to be a little patient sometimes with goaltenders, but the Wild are good. They play a team game, and then they've got a real nice wall and a confident feeling with him back there in net.
We haven't mentioned it on the show yet, but I know a lot of people and the fans know that Jacob Trouba's grandfather passed away yesterday. Yep. He went and met with the family, then he flew to Chicago, or his family, I should say, flew to Chicago, played the game, and he'll spend the All-Star break back there. Big part of his life, and really the game that he played last night, you could really tell that well, I guess that's just being a man and being a great player, that he showed up and played that well while he was going through the death of his grandfather, who he was close with.
Yeah, it's, you know what, and you see this a lot in sport for an athlete, and, you know, it's a tough thing to go through for anybody, for the family, and, you know, fly home, you know, miss practice, skate, then, you know, skate in the morning, got there for the game, and it's maybe that's the one thing that when you go through something like that, and you see it over and over, players, the ability to go into a team and that atmosphere, and maybe it's a nice way to have that distraction, to go out and play that sport, to play that game. And Trouba did it to a, you know, big-time fashion last night with the minutes he played and what he brought, the impact he brought to the team. So, you know, credit to him as, you know, him and his family go through a difficult time here through this All-Star break.
Shane, we appreciate it as always. Enjoy the All-Star break. Any big plans?
Not much going on. Nope. It's quick. This is just a weekend off, which is nice, and I'll take that.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, enjoy it. We appreciate your time, as always, and thanks for doing this again today.
All right, thank you. Have a good day.
Thanks so much, Sheriff.
Shane 90, at Shane 90 on Twitter is where you can follow him, and, of course, TSN3, and right here on TSN 1290. It's interesting with the All-Star break, gentlemen, because the All-Stars, like Patrick Laine will fly there today, Jets are, but it used to be like, I presume they have to be back out of Monday to get to St. Louis. Unless they do like they did earlier this season where they flew in the day of, and that was NHLPA instilled, mm-hmm. Unless they do it on that morning. But interesting. It's not the 3 or 4 or 5 day break like it used to be. It's just you got to get back at it.
That's good. That's good for us as fans, right? Just get this crap over with and let's go start playing again.
Well, speaking of that crap, we are going to talk some NHL All-Star festivities and the latest with some trade thoughts coming up next on The Big Show, TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on The Big Show, TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca, Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki with you on The Big Show. We'll get in the All-Star festivities in just a moment, and by the way, we are carrying the All-Star festivities on Sunday. The game itself, the 3-on-3 battle at 2:30 begins our coverage here on TSN 1290. And TSN1290.ca, but the trade fever around goalie Marc-Andre Fleury has picked up in the National Hockey League. He has not started in 6 games as the Pens have rolled with Matt Murray. And nothing's really changed in his situation. Clearly, he would like to be on a team where he's going to play more as a starter. Clearly, the Penguins would probably like to get something for him. And here they sit. The reason it's amping up a bit is I would presume, after not starting for 6 straight games, Mr. Fleury himself has put the word out, maybe through his agent, that he would like to get traded. Do you think there's a market for him, and do you think he gets dealt before the end of the season? And I guess that goes for a lot of goalies right now.
32-year-old goalie with 2 years left at $6 million in a cash-strapped, salary cap-heavy league. I don't know.
And Fleury kind of holds his destiny, right? With the no move, uh-huh. Like he can kind of pick and choose in a sense of where he wants to go. There, I don't know. I don't see any way. I don't know how if a team needs a goalie that bad. I don't know if they have the cap room for $5 million and Fleury. And, even if he did, yeah. Wouldn't you rather have Ben Bishop? Like Fleury's playoff record. outside of the cup win with Detroit
with
isn't
Bishop
Sterling.
Go ahead.
Like playoff record versus injury almost, right?
Problem with Bishop is he's a free agent, so like I don't know if you'd be trading to get Fleury because he has contract and a veteran goalie, or if you're just trading to shore something up, or like it's all situational. Yeah. But
is
there more
the negotiation,
pressure?
Please, instead of the $6 million for two more years?
Is there more pressure on the Pens to get something done? Just because he's obviously unhappy.
I don't think there's. You know what, man? If I'm the Pens, I'm not all that motivated to move them. They've got a team here that's got a heck of a chance at repeating as cup champs, and going into the playoffs with Murray and Marc-Andre Fleury ain't all that bad of a thing.
If I can't get something back that I'm happy with and confident in as a backup as well, I do this in the offseason. I think you have an excellent chance to make another run at a second cup. Do you try to go two in a row? I'm in no rush to deal him unless I get my socks knocked off.
Yeah, well, and Matt Murray was only in the playoffs because Fleury got hurt.
Yeah.
Right? Like, there's a decent chance that Murray might have never gotten a shot at a playoff start, right? So it's kind of the same situation where, you know, Murray's been banged up a bit this year too. So, I mean, to me, it makes all the sense in the world to keep that insurance policy in your back pocket. And
sure agree, yeah.
You know what? Fleury seems like a stand-up guy, or enough of one that I wouldn't be surprised at all if Pittsburgh came to him after the season and said, look, like, we need to keep this kid. Can you help us out for the expansion draft? And he'd probably, I would think, at least fall in line.
You, this is the kind of thing, even if they get something that knocks their socks off, you can look like you can get your Sadaka ripped off in a hurry if Martin is injured, right, sometime here, and you lose your chance to repeat because you don't have a solid backup option.
NHL All-Star festivities this weekend in Los Angeles. Players are en route. If you're on Twitter and follow some, I saw Brad Marchand just tweeted a picture of him and Tuukka Rask at the airport leaving for Los Angeles.
What a joke, he just got fined for that slew foot. Are you kidding me?
$10,000 he got fined, though. That's more than, I mean, I guess he can be fined $10,000 because he's been fined and suspended before. But $10,000 for the fine, I like. No suspension, though.
I think it's a joke. It's ridiculous, man. That is right up there with the very worst thing you can do in hockey, the slew foot, man. And that's like, that's it, huh? Give me a break. And an offender, it's just, I can't stand the lack of internal fortitude with the NHL and this whole discipline, suspension, all the rest of it. Right? This is the major thing for this league going forward, how they start dealing with, because, hey, man, if you don't want fighting in the game, then you have to deal with these things way more strictly, I believe.
All-Star festivities this weekend, gentlemen. 3-on-3, Patrick Laine is going to be there. Doesn't know which skill competition he'll be taking a part of, whether it's hardest shot. I would think it's going to be accuracy, given what he did in the Jet Skills competition, 4-for-4 in record-setting time. But, of course, he does have that 100-mile-an-hour slap shot, but I know there are guys who have a little bit harder ones than that. What are you looking forward to seeing from Patrick Laine, and then just the All-Star festivities overall?
I think just seeing the young fellow out there having fun, smiling and all the rest of it, drinking it in, taking it in. That's living it through his eyes and his smile sort of thing is what I'm going to be doing over the weekend. It'll be fun. That will be fun to watch.
You know, I can't remember who said this yesterday, but they just kind of mentioned that the big thing for Laine here is just to kind of realize that this is your life moving forward in the NHL.
Yeah.
Like, just get used to this kid. Like, this is going to be basically what he does every single year moving on forward here. And, yeah, like, I'm not really looking forward to anything specific. They got rid of the breakaway challenge, which is too bad because that's the one time you see any sort of personality from NHL All-Stars. But, yeah, just to watch him play with some of the guys that he'll be playing with, it's what a cool thrill for him as he's still 18. Like, I always forget that. He's still 18 years old.
Yeah.
All-Star festivities Sunday on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca at 2:30 p.m. with your coverage. We'll take a break and talk some football when we come back. Jeff Reinbold, the new defensive coordinator of the Hamilton Tiger Cats and NFL analyst for Sky Sports, will join us next on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 is proud to support United Way's Coats for Kids. Coats for Kids has been a Winnipeg institution since 1989. Every year from October to February, the program distributes winter outerwear to families in need. For some children, having a warm coat means attending school on a cold day instead of staying home. Donations can be dropped off at any Winnipeg Fire Paramedic Service Station or Perth's Dry Cleaners. Full details are online now at unitedwaywinnipeg.ca. This is The Big Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca, helping you kick off your weekend on a lovely Friday morning here in Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada. Jim Tilth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki with you. And we're going to talk some football coming up here right away with our good friend Jeff Reinbold, who was just named new defensive coordinator of the Hamilton Tiger Cats. So was DB and linebackers coach. Of course, former Winnipeg Blue Bombers head coach gets a bump up.
Yeah, that'll be a lot of fun to watch, right? They will be uber aggressive. The thing is, they create a bit of a void for themselves on special teams. They arguably had right up there with the very best special teams in the CFL while he was the coach, but he brings that level of aggression here with on the defensive side of the ball, and he knows this stuff defensively. It's going to be a lot of fun to watch for CFL fans.
Of your favorite coaches, ranking them, where does he sit?
Well, I didn't have a relationship with any other coach to the same depth that I had with Coach Reinbold because he invited that. Right, like with his players, like you just couldn't be that tight with Cal Murphy and a guy like Dave Ritchie, who is in a lot of ways like a grandfather figure to me. It was a little bit different because of the age and all the rest of its situation. But the very first time, like to try and understand the mind or the mental snap of it is Cal Murphy leaves, and I walk into the locker room one day and I see a guy doing deadlifts with spandex shorts on. No shirt on, like tats and all tanned up, and I walk by and into our equipment room, and I say to Brad Foddy, I'm like, who is that? And he goes, that's your next head coach. So the difference from Cal Murphy to Jeff Reinbold was super cool, and like I've said a million times, man, the guys would have jumped on a grenade for him in a second. He made the game a lot of fun.
Jeff Reinbold joins us now doing some NFL analysis for Sky Sports in the UK and, of course, joining us every Friday to talk NFL. Congratulations, Jeff, on the promotion to being defensive coordinator. Before we get into that, I was just talking to Troy about his time with you as a head coach. You remember the first time you met Troy Westwood? You were deadlifting, he said.
In the weight room, yeah. But it wasn't a lot of weight. That's all. Well, Westy, I tell you what, it was, you know, Westy can get behind the bar a little bit too. So, you know, it was funny.
I bet. Congratulations on being named defensive coordinator. Must be exciting for you.
It is because, you know, it's an opportunity to continue a legacy that lived in Hamilton since, you know, Angelo Mosca and Garney Henley and Ben Zambiazzi and Les Brown and on and on and on, you know, Calvin Teagle and Grover Covington. I mean, you can name a billion of them. It's always been, you know, there are a couple things. I think I remember saying this to Westy when we had our first trip into Hamilton, which is actually where I won one of my first game as a head coach, it's easy for me to remember because there weren't that many of them, but I remember telling the kids who were standing in the meeting, I said, there's two things you can guarantee when you go to Hamilton. The town's awful. The air's horrendous. You know, it's the stadium's a dump, and they're going to play good defense. And that's kind of the way it's always been there.
Coach, speaking of defense, how surprised were you of the lack of willingness or ability of the Pittsburgh Steelers to alter things to try and stop the bleeding against the Patriots in that game?
You know what? I'd say that's a really great observation, Troy, because, you know, I think what's happening in Pittsburgh is they're going through a transition of cultures. You know, if you look at the Steelers during their great years, and it was always zone blitz, it was Dick LeBeau, it was attack the offense. And then when Mike came in, he brought, because of his background, he's a Tampa 2 guy. He's a Tony Dungy guy. Your eyes always on the quarterback. You know, play coverage. Don't risk yourself with pressure. And I think that caught up with them because they just really apparently felt like they were going to just play soft, all that soft zone and drive on the ball and make plays. And, you know, obviously they got Shazier and they've got Dupree and they got Timmons. They got great players. But every time I looked out there and I saw a three-man rush and you got, you know, James Harrison not rushing, I'm thinking to myself, boy, that's, you know, Dick LeBeau would have a conniption if that was the case. You know, you just, I think it's a process right now for them that they're going through that they, you know, Mike wants to put his stamp on that defense. He's been a defensive head coach. He's been a defensive assistant in the league. And that's why I think, you know, Dick LeBeau was ushered out the door a couple of years ago. And you know, the Steelers are feeling the effects of that transition.
Also with the Steelers, Jeff, you know, we saw the Facebook thing with Antonio Brown and sort of thought, well, that's weird and not right, and he was disciplined. But now that the game is over and the season's over, lots coming out about the relationship with Antonio Brown and Ben Roethlisberger, and Ben Roethlisberger maybe not happy with the lack of discipline given to some players. And it reminded me of watching A Football Life with Troy Aikman, where he was emphatic. A lot of people think I retired because of concussions. I didn't. I retired because I was tired of being the heavy guy to want to push us to win more when our head coach wasn't doing that. Talk about maybe what's going on in Pittsburgh and how that relationship, if a coach, you know, regardless what a coach does, if he's too hard on Antonio, he loses Antonio. If he's not hard enough, Ben Roethlisberger's upset. Talk about that balance maybe that goes on with teams and specifically going on in Pittsburgh right now.
Well, I think, you know, the only place that I know of that has been able to, I'm talking about in the National Football League, that's been able to balance it is New England. Because, you know, you think about some of the really big personalities that have gone through there. Junior Seau, and, you know, I love Junior like he's my brother, but his history at San Diego was a guy that was just going to freelance and do his own thing. And you talk about Randy Moss, who, you know, obviously everybody understands his deal, but Those personalities, those characters were able to find a home inside of the structure in New England. But that's because it permeates the whole organization. I don't think that, frankly, I don't think Mike's as strong as Belichick is in terms of imparting that, you know, do your job mentality. You know, it's like Edelman said, and Edelman's a little bit of a, you know, he's a free thinker too, but he understands the deal. And his kind of left-handed jab at the Steelers was, you know, we don't do that at our place. You know, and that's when he and Ben got in the thing about, you know, well, I look at our Lombardi trophies and you look at your Lombardi trophies and they're the same. But, you know, that's a tough deal, man. When you're a head coach in pro football, you're dealing with a lot of factors that people don't even consider. You know, guys are making money. You know that you can't cut them. You've got a guy that's got guaranteed millions of dollars, you're not going to be able to cut that guy. So you got to learn to manage that personality inside of the team structure. And, you know, guys, think about it. I mean, he's got a six-figure contract with Facebook, and Facebook wants him to, you know, do a Facebook Live deal. What are you going to fine him? $100,000? He can't do it underneath the collective bargaining agreement. So it's just, you got to really, really be careful about the personalities you put in your room.
Coach, do you think Aaron Rodgers, 33 years old, do you think Ted Thompson and the Green Bay Packers owe it to him or should go out of their way to surround him with additional talent this upcoming season?
Yeah, you know what? They got to get better. I mean, the bottom line is, you know, they're a franchise that, interesting, very interesting, Troy. They're a draft and grow team. They want to develop their own players. They like, you know, again, they create – Green Bay is such an interesting dynamic because it's the smallest 200,000 people. You know, how are you going to bring a kid from an environment that's never been around that into that and have him survive? So they've got some additional factors that other teams don't have to work with. But you look at Teddy's history in free agency, and really he's hit on almost all of them. Woodson, Peppers, you know, Cook now. So I think they need to be more active in free agency because it's unfair to him that he doesn't have the kind of tools around him that he really needs. I mean, you look at the running back situation, and you know, and everybody roots for Ripkowski because he's a tough kid and he works hard. But is he good enough to win a championship with? Eddie Lacy's been a huge disappointment. Montgomery's a wide receiver that, you know, they is just playing there because that's what they have to do. And, you know, Christian Michaels, you know, failed out of how many programs. So you look at it and say, yeah, I think he needs better tools around him. And he needs some better tools on defense because Clay Matthews can't do all of it. They got to have some pass rushers. And, you know, you look at Ryan's inside, and he's a good player and solid player. But, you know, when it comes down to it, is he good enough to win a championship with?
We'll get into Super Bowl 51 with you next week, Coach. But before we let you go, if you had to choose, who would be your NFL MVP this year?
Boy, man, I'm gonna tell you something. I think both of them are taking snaps in the Super Bowl because you look at, you know, Matt Ryan, and his season has just been phenomenal. I mean, we did a statistical comparison to them in the Greatest Show on Turf, and you know, with the exception of I think it's 5 yards a game rushing, the Falcons are better than that unbelievable Rams team, you know, with Mike Martz at control. I really think you have a hard time saying that anybody had a better year than him. And then on the other hand, you look at what Brady did. I mean, in a season that was shortened by 4 games. So you give it to either of those two, and I think you're in pretty good shape.
Coach, we appreciate your time. As always, you can follow him on Twitter at Jeff_Reinbold, and he is the new defensive coordinator of the Hamilton Tiger Cats and a good friend of ours doing some NFL work with Sky in the UK. Thanks, Coach, and have a great weekend.
Hey, fellas, I'm catching a flight to Houston tomorrow morning, so let's do a bunch of these from H-Town.
Sounds good.
Great, Coach. Thanks so much, man. Take care.
All right.
Aloha. Talk soon.
H-Town, aloha. Going to the Super Bowl. Colton, hey, from the Brew House, Canadian Brew House here, the manager there, he's going to the Super Bowl in Houston, too.
Nice. Sounds like he should be taking you.
He should be.
The plug. Hey,
there's a lot of people should be taking me.
Hey, don't the Packers kind of owe the Vikings one? Brett Favre went to the Vikings, and Green Bay needing a running back. Can you imagine if AP ends up in
Stop
Green Bay?
It.
What kind of storyline that
yes,
is?
Yes, let's do it. It.
Just saying. That'd
do
be
it. No. What's Brett Favre's quote? I wanted to play for anybody who is going to play the Packers. Let's do it. 18 mil is all he wants. Put it down. We'll take a break, get back into the Jets' win over the Blackhawks 5-3 last night in Chi-Town. That's next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Big shout out to Andy Ruwicki and all the great guys and gals out of Selkirk. Chrysler, tired of this traffic? Well, heck, take it off road, baby. 2016 Ram truck blowout going on right now at Andy Ruwicki Selkirk Chrysler. Brand new 2016 Ram 1500 SLT. Check it out. Much more information at selkirkchrysler.com. Selkirk Chrysler, just a slap shot north of Winnipeg.
Welcome back to The Big Show on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki with you on this beautiful Friday morning, helping kick off your weekend. The Jets beat the Blackhawks 5-3. Before we get back into that, Monster Jam returns to the MTS Center this weekend, Saturday, tomorrow the 28th, and Sunday the 29th. Tickets are on sale now through Ticketmaster.ca. Don't miss your chance to see some of the best world-class drivers, including Gravedigger, Northern Nightmare, Nitro Menace, Jailbird, and more. You can keep listening for us today. Well, right now. Keep listening right now and visit TSN1290.ca for complete details. We have a pair of tickets to Monster Jam this weekend, 780-1290, the 12th caller through. We'll get those tickets. Jets beat the Blackhawks 5-3 yesterday. Your thoughts on the game once again?
Well, great concern. I suppose, hey, out to the 2-0 start. It's like, whew, it's always a little scary. Jumping out to a biggish lead right early on because there's so much tick left, so many minutes left to go by. So once they were up 2-0, I was just like, "Okay, boys, just keep playing as if it's a 0-0 type game. Don't really change too much up." And then, of course, as you would expect, the Blackhawks really poured on and dominate ultimately from a possession standpoint for sure. The first and the second period. The second period in a real huge way. The scoring chances 11-4 for Chicago, possession 74% to 26%, and then at the end of two, the Jets are down, and you're like, oh boy. And Jets having all kinds of trouble coming out of their defensive zone, all kinds of trouble maintaining puck possession through the neutral zone. Same thing carries into the third, and it just looked to me like pretty much the Chicago Blackhawks, what did you say, they're 16-1-1 when leading after two periods,
so year,
just
yeah.
suffocating wins. Any opportunity or hope for the Jets to come back in this game. I thought for the big chunk of the third period, the only two guys who were really able to bust through and create any opportunities would be the combination of Ehlers and Laine. When they were out in the ice, they had a couple of chances. Other than that, it just looked like a slow march to death for the game yesterday. And then, hello, Andrew Kopp, right, rips one. And then before you're even done celebrating the fact that the game's tied, Brian Little goes in there and rips one over the shoulder of Mr. Darling. So it's just a fantastic treat. Maybe it could be considered a robbery of some sort, but heck, the Jets have lost a couple. They maybe deserve to win. Last night they won one. They maybe deserve to lose. Take it and get out of Illinois, boys.
the funny thing about that Little goal is, what did the team have so much trouble with throughout the game? It was getting out of their own zone cleanly and transitioning into offense the other way. So, of course, naturally, Laine makes a brilliant play to hold the puck along the blue line there, flips it up to Trouba, who then makes a brilliant play to shield himself from the defender, yeah, and feeds it to Little for a shot off the rush and a goal. Uh-huh. Like, it was just funny where I totally agree. When it was 3-2, it was, can Chicago just score to make the just like put us out of our misery, because there just wasn't a whole lot going on, and then it's just wild that the switch flips like that. And how about irony, too, where, you know, Joel Quenneville probably uses his challenge there as a bit of a timeout on that fourth goal. Yeah. That fifth goal by the Jets was offside by a mile. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, like there was a legitimate chance where if
the empty netter.
Yeah, if he, you know, kind of just believes in his team a little bit there and doesn't go with that risk, that he's able to get that overturned and it's a one-goal game for the last, you know, minute 45.
Well, and speaking of the transition and the trouble the team had, the Jets, that is, through the neutral zone, I also thought they didn't capitalize on it, but the Ehlers to Laine 2-on-1 where he just had to pass the net. But that was set up by a great play by Brian Little to come back in his own end all the way, gets the puck out of the front of the net along the wall, and a great pass out. So good transition. I thought Brian Little had a really good game last night and has been really instrumental the past dozen games for this team. Connor Hellebuyck returns to the lineup. He makes 38 saves. He gets a win. First game in about 2 weeks for him. Complete game for sure. Here's head coach Paul Maurice on the play of Connor Hellebuyck.
Well, simple game plan, obvious play. Chicago, you know, everything went to the net. Everything went to the net. And they're honestly not a team that does that, right? They're looking for seams. They're looking for an extra play because they can make those plays. So they threw everything at the net, and he looked solid, you know, controlled the front. Really good game for him.
And here's Connor Hellebuyck on what he felt his most important change that he saw or worked on during this sort of downtime where Andre Pavlik got four starts in a row.
I worked on the things that I need to work on. Got my mind right. Got a little more relaxed. I don't know if you can notice it, but I can definitely feel it. Definitely more calm in my upper body and really got back to my game. Not trying to do too much. Not trying to do other people's jobs. Just playing my game.
His game is simple, huh? Like, it's all really based on positioning. And it just, he's typically pretty darn quiet in that crease compared to, for instance, an Andre Pavlik, right? They're so wildly different stylistically. But he did survive the early barrage there. It was fun listening to the broadcast and just the, okay, wake him up a little bit, a couple of scary scoring opportunities, and then for the most part settled in pretty well.
We'll take a break, and when we come back, it's usually NFL six-pack time, even though we haven't had a six-pack since the end of the regular season. We're going to do our Super Bowl 51 prediction next week, of course. So the prop bets are out. We'll discuss the prop bets in our normal time of the six-pack on The Big Show next. TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Okay. Congratulations to William Owens, TSN 1290 Subway Sports Star of the Week. William was nominated by his coach, Ryan Donner. He's 6 years old. William is, not the coach. And plays for the Greendale 5-6 Timbits hockey team. Will is a very strong candidate for this award because of how he conducts himself on and off the ice at the age of six. In my 3 years of watching and coaching Timbits hockey, I've never seen anybody with this type of team spirit and hockey ability at such a young age. Will understands that it's a team game and need not be reminded to pass the puck along to the players on the team who don't quite have the same strong hockey skills that he possesses. You really have to see it to believe it, as coach says. Every game, Will pops in a couple of goals, then helps sets up teammates who have yet to score a goal this season.
Ah, super cute. Attaboy, Will.
I would truly like to see Will receive the Subway Sports Star of the Week because of his athletic ability, his strong desire to learn, how enjoyable and easy he is to coach, and most importantly, because of his strong team spirit. Thanks for your consideration. Consideration no more.
Sounds like Mom and Dad are doing a good job with Will.
He is our Sports Star of the Week. Thanks for the nomination, Ryan. William is today's Subway Sports Star of the Week. William receives a $50 gift card from Subway. Eat fresh. If you'd like to nominate someone to be our next Subway Sports Star of the Week, tell us about them now at tsn1290.ca. We'll announce our next winner next Friday. Congratulations and thanks for the nomination.
50 clams for a 5 or 6 year old fella at Subway? That's like a couple months of good eating.
That's the lotto bag.
That's a lot
for
of
us.
Carved turkeys, baby.
That's a good idea.
Oh, yeah.
That's a slow Sunday after a strong Saturday for guys our age. So far, there have been, this is from Gary Lawless, who's in on the Naylor and Landsberg. If you just tuning in at the start of the show, Troy pointed out
he's not biting, is he, on that?
Naylor and Landsberg put out a Twitter poll of, hey, Maple Leafs fans, would you like to trade Mitch Marner for Patrick Laine? And Gary Lawless is putting out so far 4,500 respondents to this question, with 53% voting against a Marner for Laine trade. And Gary is weighing in, wonders what Winnipeggers will say. So 53% of Leafs fans on this poll in Toronto say they would not trade, or they would not trade Marner for Laine.
If Gary really wanted to have fun with it, he would have said, so far 4,500 people have responded to this stupid question.
Yeah, if he wanted to delve into that. Took a little heat over that. I would not trade Marner for Laine, although Marner is a very nice player.
He is. I don't watch like every Leaf game that's out there, but fair share, he is one heck of a player. Like when I think about it, I kind of sit back and go, I don't think so, but wow.
He jumps off the page pretty quick. Like it takes you about 10 seconds to watch a Leafs game before, who is 16?
Yeah.
You know, we talk about the Jets contracts that are due this year and then next. It'll be real interesting to be a Leafs GM 3 years from now and then 6 years from now.
Oh, boy. Oh, yeah.
And how you dole that out.
After a cup or two, especially.
So this is normally NFL six-pack time. Of course, Super Bowl 51 has the Atlanta Falcons taking on the New England Patriots and Tom Brady. Cheaters never prosper unless you're Tom Brady and Bill Belichick. Then you prosper quite well.
Boy.
And Pete Carroll. But that's another story for another day and my own personal bias.
Pete Carroll, drop a bomb at USC and leave town.
I'm out.
Straight to Seattle.
I had a big debate with my friend Miles Jones years ago about Pete Carroll, and it took over the entire evening. It lasted like 3 hours about Pete Carroll, and I kept saying, he's a cheater, and cheaters should never prosper. He's doing fine, Jim. He's got a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
They took his title away. Who cares at USC? Anyway, we'll move on from there. So what we're going to do on the six-pack today is the prop bets are out. And the prop bets are always interesting to me because you can literally bet on anything and everything to do with the Super Bowl game. So Troy's going to throw out, what, six bets? Or
well, we'll just give her until it's over. Yeah, and you got the music ready to go?
Oh, we
got to go.
Okay,
music, right?
Right?
I mean, come on. Man, this is part of the tradition.
I guess it's tougher than it looks.
This is our Friday jam, baby.
Play that funky music.
Okay, talking prop bets, baby, and we'll dip our toes into the wild early on here, JT. I'll serve up this one for you, okay? Odds on the primary color of Lady Gaga's hair when she's first on stage. Blonde is 2-3, brown is 3-1, and pink is 10-1. You going blonde, brown, or pink, homie?
Who's Lady Gaga? Actually, I'm kidding. I have a friend. I'll name him Greg Pesheshnik, who I am quite certain closes his office door on a weekly basis and plays a little Gaga and really turns his hips up.
Nice.
Loves Lady Gaga, I think.
A bit of poker face, born this way. Pick
poker face. I was born this way. I'm going to go. Is there none of the above? I think it's going to be a funkier color.
Ooh. Ooh. I did see one longer list, but if you got to go blonde, brown, or pink, which one are you going to dance with?
I'll take the surefire blonde.
That's the favorite of 2 to 3. Betting on a favorite, huh?
Taking the favorite.
I'd have to agree. I'm going with JT here because I think the hair, woo! The hair will not be the statement at the Super Bowl halftime show. She's not going to let the hair do the talking. She's
looking
gonna,
for
she's
a
gonna,
nip.
And you know what? There might be something else there.
What
wait,
did you just
say?
Well, that was the most controversial when the nip.
Oh.
The Seinfeld Christmas card made an appearance with Timberlake and Janet Jones.
Jackson.
Oh, my.
Remember that Janet controversy?
That is a bet, too.
Janet Jackson, sorry, not Janet Jones.
Janet Jackson, sorry. Who's Janet Jones?
That's Wayne Gretzky's
Gretzky to you, fella.
What?
What Super Bowl were you watching?
Holy smack!
How dare me? How dare me?
Well, we better move on, boys.
That was a wardrobe malfunction, by the way.
So it was, yeah. Hey, Joe Buck, and I've always lost in the dreamy blue eyes of Troy Aikman, so I don't even hardly know what Joe Buck looks like.
Great broadcasting.
There's a bet here saying clean shaven for the Super Bowl 10-1. So he usually has some stuff on his scruff on
his
face.
Yeah, he's had a beard lately.
Okay, so 10-1 odds.
Because of his addiction to the hair plugs.
Joe,
he's all about the hair.
Are you going to go Joe Buck being clean shaven for 10-1, or are you going to say he's got some crap on his face?
What's he got right now?
Crap on his face.
I'm going to go crap on his face.
Pardon?
Well, I'm going to go beard. Let's be beard. We're disrespecting hair today, and I don't like it. He'll go with facial hair, beard.
It's going to be a bit more than a 5 o'clock shadow. It's going to be noticeable. You're right. The hair plugs have gone. He's taking any hair he can get right now.
Yeah.
There's no way. I would put
he's got
most of the
back,
money I own
waxing.
That he is not clean shaven.
Really? I'm going to go clean shaven. It's fresh start, Super Bowl. It's going to be maybe a little bit warm down in H-Town. I'm going to go clean shaven. And he might have, you know, you can go whisper in an uncle's ear, dude, go drop some cake on this. Yeah. It's 10-1. I'm going to shave the Saturday night.
That's true. He should put some own action down on his own facial hair.
He should. Might get in trouble for that. Okay, serious now. And I'm pretty sure which way you're going to go with this, JT, but I do find one aspect of this very interesting. Odds to win Super Bowl MVP. Tom Brady at 3-2. Matt Ryan is 7-4. Julio Jones at 11-2. And the field at 10-1. Who you picking?
I take Matty Ice. Matty Ice all day. He'll have 4 touchdowns minimum.
7-4.
Huh. That is, you know what? My first, I'm picking the Patriots to win, I think. But my
what?
First thought there was Julio. You know what? Julio MVP in a losing cause.
Julio
he's
in
gonna,
a losing cause.
Remember Larry Fitzgerald
yeah.
a few years ago when the Cardinals went on their run? And he had that game against Pittsburgh where he basically threw the team on his back and went for it. I think Julio is going to have such a dynamic game. He gets the MVP in a losing cause. I think the first time since Super Bowl 5 or 6 when a couple Cowboys defensive linemen, I think Randy White was one of them, grabbed MVP honors.
I dedicate this MVP to my toe.
I'm going to grab the field at 10-1, boys, because I hate Tom. I agree. I think the Patriots maybe win this game. But, boy, you get all these complimentary receivers, and if one of them gets keyed, whether it's Matty Ice picking one or Tom
Gabriel?
Brady, you look at what Chris Hogan pulled off last week, right? If he's able to lock onto one receiver and go put up 150 and maybe 2-3 touchdowns for 10-1, I think I'm going to bite at that. How about this, boys? Odds to score the most touchdowns. Almost a little bit hand-in-hand with this. Julio Jones, 4-1. Freeman, 6-1. LeGarrette Blount, 7-1. Chris Hogan, 7-1. Edelman, 9-1. Who do you want for most touchdowns for the game?
I don't know, because they win this game probably avoiding Julio too much. He gets a six-pointer,
right?
Yeah.
Belichick will remove
maybe
him.
Gabriel gets 2 touchdowns.
You got the field at 12-1.
I'll take the field.
The big juicy one, right? That's a juicy
one. I'm playing the field, Brandon.
Good for you. I'm playing Julio.
Julio.
You can't win MVP unless you lead the Super Bowl in touchdowns. So, I mean, hey, you can have a plan all you want until Julio Jones I guess metaphorically punches you in the face. Right? Like, you could have a plan to stop a guy, but when he's 6'3", 230, and runs like the wind, like the Green Bay Packers found out, I don't know. I don't think the Patriots are going to slow Julio
He'll
down
get
necessarily.
His.
I think he's going to get his in the game.
He'll get his.
I'll take Julio on that one. And underdog pick, LeGarrette Blount.
Yeah, I'm going to go with LeGarrette Blount. I think 7-1's nice little juicy hit, as Huss would like to sprinkle on something like that.
That's actually a good pick.
Here's an interesting one, guys, and I can't believe these odds here for this one. Odds both quarterbacks throw for 300 or more yards. I would think that would be something approaching even money. 5-1.
I'll take that. I'll take it. I'll double down on it.
That's crazy, huh?
That's stupid. 300.
300 plus yards. Odds that both QBs do it, and you get 5-1?
Both QBs, though.
That is chunky.
What'd Tom throw against the... Did he throw 300 against the Steelers?
Oh, I think he went half. I think he went easy. I think he went 360. Might have been 400. Like, that's...
He had 200 on the flea flicker.
you're telling me Matt Ryan's not throwing for 300 in the game? And we don't even need to break that one down. That's just dumb. That's just flat out dumb.
It's strange, huh?
Atlanta's secondary's not good. I'll take that. I'll take that action.
Odds the game.
I'll give you $5 right now.
Breaks the Super Bowl for most combined points. Now, I don't know what that number is. But those are 8-3. Like, are we expecting some sort of wild shootout here?
I don't think it'll be crazy, but I think it's going to be more than normal for Super Bowls. So I'll go. It was 61 points, the over-under in Atlanta Green Bay. I think both teams, I think it's going to be like 30-27, 35-24, something like that. I know that's a big difference.
Well, and here's the one good thing about the Patriots, right? When it comes to the over. And if Roger Goodell's in Houston and they're up by 20 at some point, they're going to want to go up by 40. Like, there's just an extra edge I think the Patriots have with Goodell there. And, like, with it being so close to Belichick and Brady, forcing Goodell to hand the trophy over to them and shake their hands.
I don't know
how the Patriots go under 35. I think the Patriots put up a big number.
Tom Brady does the Roger Clemens when he was back in Boston for the first time and threw like 19 Ks. And when he was walking off the mound, looked up at the owner's box. You think Brady does that to Goodell?
He won't have to look up too far if he's on the stage with him. It's going to be interesting.
That's not going to happen, though. Graham Doyle on Twitter wants to know the over-under and how many times Joe Buck mentions Aaron Rodgers during the Super Bowl.
That I haven't seen. Yeah. How about the color of Belichick's hoodie? Blue is 3-4, so you're getting, you know, it's less than even. And then you got gray, red, and no hoodie. Gray 5-3, red 9-1, and no hoodie 9-1.
I think there's a hoodie, but aren't they wearing white?
Oh, that's a good point. They are wearing white.
So I'll take the... There's no option for the white.
There's no option. Although maybe white is sort of gray, right?
Yeah, I'll take the gray. Texas is a red state. So I'm going to go that Belichick, maybe in a bit of a homage to his favorite Republican candidate, goes with the red hoodie on Sunday.
Now, I'm afraid to ask this question because it did come up and I've just found this. Will Lady Gaga have a wardrobe malfunction in brackets, must expose intimate part of body?
Yes, I told you.
Yes is plus 1,500. No is minus 5,000.
I told you. See, that's the thing with the Super Bowl. They hate that kind of stuff, but yet Lady Gaga's more out there than Janet Jackson.
There.
So she's more risky to do something. Miley Cyrus, is that her name, when she was riding the whatever she was riding? The award show?
Yep.
That just ain't going to happen again, though, right? Like, that ain't going to happen.
NFL would ban
that. The ladies, she's kind of classy, though, right? Like, you see her at award shows. I don't think she's like Janet.
So this is the nip or no nip pick. I pick no nip. Nothing.
I think it's a clean sweep, no nip all across the board here.
Timberlake. He didn't get enough grief for that.
That's a good point.
Everyone blamed Janet.
Yeah.
Little JT, by the way. Anyways. What else we got?
Got one that bugs me. Should we do a funny one or one that bugs me?
Let's do both.
This just ain't right here. You can bet there's a prop here. Will a player leave the game and not return due to concussion or concussion-like symptoms? Yes is plus 130. No is minus 160. That just ain't right, huh?
Yeah.
You don't put money on on injuries, right?
No.
Great. No.
Come on, man.
It ain't right. Number of times Deflategate is said during the broadcast. Over 2.5 or under 2.5?
I'm taking the over.
Heavy over.
Heavy over.
2.5 a quarter.
Exactly. Every time they mention Goodell, too.
And all those dudes, like, you know, does Lady Gaga mention Trump is there? Of course you get all these crazy wild things, right?
Is Trump going to the Super Bowl?
That's a good question.
The president normally doesn't go. You know who will be there is Marky Mark. He'll be sitting there in the booth with John Bon Jovi and Gronk.
He will be.
He'll be sitting there, his long hair. I know his name's not Marky Mark, but Mark Wahlberg will be there.
We get it, yeah.
Promoting Ted 3.
He'll be with Kraft, huh? Right beside Kraft. Probably. Oh, yeah. High-fiving.
Real tight.
That went well.
All right. What's the what about the coin toss? You can take a prop bet on that, too.
Oh, yeah.
I always go heads. Whenever I had to take a coin toss.
I'm always
toss,
a tails guy.
Yeah, tails never fails, man.
Yeah.
That's true. I didn't win a lot of coin tosses. But I always went heads for some reason. When you get there, they'd be like, okay, this is heads, this is tails. I'd be like, heads. And they go, oh, it's tails. I'd go toth. Those are the prop bets that we're going with for Super Bowl 51 on the abbreviated different version of the NFL six-pack. We'll, of course, tee up the game and give our picks next Friday for Super Bowl 51. Ka-ka! Ka-ka! Man, this is going to be epic because the Patriots will have their muskets out trying to shoot down. It'll be like, psh! And then they got to stuff it and pack it because it's a musket from Patriot days. And you got the Falcon go, ka-ka! Ka-ka! It's going to be epic next week. Epic. We'll take a break and tee up the phone lines next. Jets win 5-3 in Chicago. Lots to talk about on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Congratulations to Mitchell Josie, who won our Monster Jam tickets. Once again, Monster Jam's at the MTS Center tomorrow, Saturday, January 28th, and Sunday the 29th. You can visit tsn1290.ca for complete details on that. Congratulations, Mitchell, and thanks for listening to The Big Show on TSN 1290 and tsn1290.ca. Earlier today, we're talking about Tiger Woods was one under after 11. He birdied the last hole, so in six holes, he went to plus four. What are your expectations for Tiger? Does he make the cut? He's in trouble now, and your thoughts on that? On the Boss Pizza Fan Line is one of the things we'll talk about, 780-1290, when we open the phone lines. And we've changed our picks yesterday, gentlemen. We're unanimous. He makes a cut. Now we're saying no.
Yeah, I'm going to, if you're going to make me decide, I'll, as much as I hope for it, I will say no, for sure. He's got a lot of dudes between him and the cut line, and he's going to have to be super solid. And if you watched any of the, if you watched it or watched the highlights from him from 12 to 17, it's just, I don't know if he can all of a sudden control that driver of his.
Yeah, if the driver is that wonky, it's not fixing itself in, I don't know, 10 hours, 14 hours, right? Like, it's, he'll miss the cut here. It's all right. He'll rebound after that, win three of the next four. I'm not too concerned.
So you're going both no cut? I'll go cut. Whatever.
I hope you're right, man.
Yeah, we'll see. Just to be that, we'll make the cut. Also today we talked about LeBron and asking for them to spend more money in Cleveland when they're the highest paying team. Also get your thoughts on that, weighing in on that. This is also interesting in the NBA as well, gentlemen, and we were talking about this. I want to mention on the air in case anybody wants to talk about it because it deals with what LeBron was saying and just leadership in the locker room and everything else that goes on when guys go public. And Bulls guard Rajon Rondo criticized Dwayne Wade and Jimmy Butler in an Instagram rant Thursday for questioning the team's desire. Of course, the Bulls had a bad loss. They've been losing lately. And both the leaders, Butler and Wade, had said stuff publicly. Rondo fired back one day after Chicago Stars went off following a rough loss to Atlanta. Though he didn't mention Wade and Butler by name, it seemed clear he was referring to them in a post that accompanied a photo of him with his former Boston Celtics teammates, Kevin Garnett and Paul Pierce. Rondo apparently referring to Garnett and Pierce, repeatedly used the term "my vets" and saying that they would never go to the media. He wrote that they didn't take days off and they didn't care about their numbers, that they played the team game.
And this is a guy who was run out of Boston for being a jerk store. This is a guy who Dallas sent home during the playoffs for being a clown. I mean, he's got a long, lengthy history. And it used to, this is one thing that really used to bug me as a player, as a part of a team in the CFL with the Bombers here, is that when a guy spoke out and he himself was an ass clown and was really inconsistent in his personality, what he brought to the table, just in discipline, doing the right things, being a true leader for the team, that guy gets up and stands and tries to deliver some sort of a message along the lines of this. Every single person in the room looks at him like, dude, shut up and sit down, man. Like, come on. And for sure, I mean, this, it seems like, expect Rondo, like something's going to happen here, right? How does he walk in the locker room after, like, Wade and Butler, sure, they go public, and a lot of people think you got to keep that in the room, and I agree with that. You got to keep that in the room, unless it's been in the room forever, and then these couple of veterans come up and present it publicly. Like, it's, there's an argument there to be had, but still, they were just talking about the young guys in that room. For Rondo to come out and just douse this with gasoline like this, it's just ridiculous.
The Jets beat the Blackhawks last night 5-3. Connor Hellebuyck makes 38 saves in his return to game action for the first time in about 2 weeks. The Jets head into the All-Star break with 30 games to go with 52 points, or 50 points in 52 games, rather, 30 games to go. They are 11-4-1 in the Central Division. Coming out of the All-Star break, they have 5 straight Central Division games. They need to win 2 out of every 3 games in the final 30. They need to win 2 out of 3 games 10 times down the stretch here in order to give themselves a chance at a playoff spot, which they currently trail by 3 points from the Calgary Flames, and LA, Vancouver, and Dallas are all ahead of them. Your thoughts on the win, and of course, going into the break, what they need to do going forward?
Well, first of all, I've got to deal with this fancy pants math that you just chucked out there. So they got to win every 2 games. They got 10 times.
2 out of 3.
One, yeah. Carry the 4 divided by 3. So that's 20 wins over their last 30 games is what they need to secure. If I got that down right, chance of that? Might that chance of accomplishing that, might be slim and none with Slim leaving town.
Yeah, that's good.
My math is just win every game. That's Alberta math. Just go out and win every game. If you're losing, you're losing.
As long as it doesn't get to the point where they have to string together 3 wins in a row, they're in the race. Once it gets to that point, they're done. Which is pretty close, actually. Now that you
Hellebuyck returned to the lineup last night. Your thoughts on his play, your thoughts on the game, your thoughts on the Jets at the All-Star break. What do you expect to see Patrick Laine take part in the All-Star festivities, which will carry Sunday afternoon at 2:30, as well as anything and everything else on The Big Show. TSN 1290, Boston Pizza Fan Line 780-1290 next.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Welcome back to The Big Show on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca on a Friday as we kick off your weekend with you. Thank you for joining us. Jim Tolt, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki. We're talking the drama in some NBA teams. We're talking the Farmers Insurance Open. Tiger Woods, 4 over, was 1 under after 11. Can he make the cut? And 3 Canadians doing well. Graham Dillette not in the top 10, tied for 8th, but Fritsch and Mr. Adam Hadwin, who's coming up that weekend of a 59. We're talking about that as well. And, of course, the Jets. They go into Chicago. They're now 4-0 against the Blackhawks this year. Connor Hellebuyck returns, makes 38 saves, gets the victory. And heading into the playoffs, heading into the All-Star break in Los Angeles, there's 30 games to go. The Jets have to win 2 of every 3 games 10 times down the stretch to give themselves an opportunity.
That's such a funny way to break it down.
That's Rick Ralph's math. I took from him. I fully credit Rick Ralph for that math. last night. So your thoughts on Hellebuck, the return, and the Jets win and everything else, of course, and what you expect from them after the All-Star break. Also, Patrick Laine's at the All-Star festivities for the Winnipeg Jets. What would you like to see him partake in the competition? Hardest shot, skills, what would you like to see him? He doesn't know, as he said yesterday prior to the Blackhawks game. 780-1290 on the Big Show. Who's our first caller?
We'll get Christian and Ron to hang on for just a sec, but we'll start off with North End Rick.
North End Rick, you're kicking us off today on a Friday. Go ahead.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Morning.
Mayor.
Hell of a game. Got to tell you, I've been married for 25 years, so I'm quite used to being wrong. yeah, apparently I was wrong.
Wait a minute. You've been married for 25 years? Like straight?
I have, sir. Yeah.
Pretty important. Well, like for you. Straight, he said.
Good for you.
Shut up, host. I got to talk about two guys that just they're blowing me away, and that's Trouba and Morrissey. I knew that Trouba was going to be good. I mean, he's a fantastic hockey player, and I expected Morrissey to be on this team and play well, but he's doing things that I didn't expect, and it's something to watch. Those two guys play defense as compared to everybody else that this team has. It's they play defense at a different level. They think the game completely differently than all the other defensemen, and they have the physical tools to be able to excel at it. But to see them put all those three things together, it's so much fun to watch.
And at some point in time, very likely D partners, huh?
Could very well be, yeah. I mean, you're spreading out the talent right now. It's going to be super interesting to see what happens with Buck moving forward. Just to see what his level of play is. You know, does he continue to revert back to the player that is the Riverboat Gambler, or does he play well like he has for the past five or six games? He's played pretty well. There's been a couple of instances where he's done things that I went, oh man, but other than that, he's played really well. Yeah. and he hasn't been that guy that's really cost him. So
you know,
I'm really looking forward to seeing what happens in this not so distant future.
You know, Rick, that's one point. There's a tremendous correlation here, where Buff, as the weeks and games were getting by, it was more and more noticeable. It was like, dude, what? Like, it was just kind of unraveling, and his risk-reward thing was going out of control, and it seemed to sort of reach a height. And then about the same time, Pavlik shows up, and you said, like, the four or five games it's been now it's been five games since then. He definitely has been way more contained in his decision-making.
Right. And not only that, what he has to realize is that, I mean, as a coach, you know that one mistake caused that massive ripple effect, right? And it's that one mistake that can hem you into an end for so much time. You know, you're on the ice for 2 minutes in your own end, and Brian Little is sucking wind, and you can't get the puck out. And all of a sudden, the puck's in the back of your neck and your net, and you're thinking, man, if we could just had that one instance, that one choice that was incorrect made, changed. It would have changed the entirety of this game.
You know, it's so interesting with Trouba and Morrissey, too, because you go back to the draft years, and, you know, Philip Forsberg was still on the board. I think Fatska from Dallas was still on the board, and you looked at that team at the time, and you're like, this team has trouble scoring goals. They need some skill. They go defenseman with Jacob Trouba. Josh Morrissey comes along, they go defenseman. I would love to know the scouting thought process of going into these, because Trouba, to me, his talent would just jump off the board. Josh Morrissey, very skilled, mobile defenseman in the Western Hockey League. But imagine doing an interview with this guy and just the intelligence that you would hear from him, because just me talking to him, I see how, you know, intelligent this kid is way beyond his years. The thought process into sticking with what you needed the most, because really you look at those two draft picks and then you look at how much skill they've drafted over in the forward lines, and really the place where they have the least depth is still defense. And yet they go with those, like, just the thought process of going through that, how they decide which guy they're going to go with and what they need the most of, is those are two picks that they you know, desperately needed. Where would they be if they had gone forwards with those two picks? Interesting.
For me, it was always when coaching, I could say that I could handle the physical error. Any physical error I can handle, that's going to happen. But it's the mental error when you're not. And it doesn't matter what sport it is. You have to think the game well and that to excel. And for those two guys, and particularly Morrissey, he is the most cerebral of them all. Truba gets by more on the pure talent, but he thinks the game well too. But Morrissey is unbelievable with that. Take care, boys.
Thanks, North and Rick. Have a good weekend. Back to the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290. Christian, you're on the Big Show. Go ahead.
Can't hear you, Christian.
Oh, Christian, we can't hear you.
Oh, hey.
There, that's a little bit better.
All right, better.
There we go. That's great.
All right, I'm going to break the mold like yesterday and talk basketball now.
Great.
So LeBron said, you know, they're looking for a playmaker and they got to spend money. But do you guys really think that's the problem there? Because I don't really know if they have a lot of money to spend, really.
Well, he says he was promised before he left and when he got back, they would spend money. And there is a tax to that, much like the Yankees.
They're into that already.
Into the luxury tax. And I guess that's what he's saying is they do pay this tax for being spending the most money in the National Basketball League. So I think it's – I don't know. I mean, obviously I'm not there or covering the team either. But LeBron seems to think that their ownership is not following through on the promise that he was given that they would spend the most money and spend at any cost if he re-signed there.
Because when you look at their roster, it's pretty deep, you know. I mean, J.R. Smith's hurt right now, but you got Kyrie Irving, you got Kevin Love, you got Tristan Thompson. You know, you got some solid guys there. I don't understand why it's not clicking and why you have to go and spend even more money. I get the frustration. It seems like...
And to Charles Barkley's point about competing, I thought that's how they won the title last year. I thought the better team was the Warriors, skill-wise. I thought they out-competed the Warriors and actually went and won that, even though they didn't have the same amount of talent. So I think that's Barkley's thing is, do you not want to compete? Do you not want to go, look, we might not be as skilled, but let's go win this like they did last year?
I like the point that you guys made this morning when we talked about this earlier, where this is kind of, you have to wonder with... To me, the level of intelligence and the type of guy LeBron James is, and we've seen this in the past with him, when he comes out and he stirs the soul of the team almost in a way to really get it all mixed up and like get them in a certain mindset to come out of it at the other end of it as a real forged, lookout, super dangerous unit. And I wouldn't be surprised at all if there's some level of calculation to this.
He does this every year. Every year he does this. Then he goes on vacation because he's old and angry and ticked off all the time, right? But, like, this is it's what he does, and it's hard to argue that it hasn't worked. I don't buy that. I don't think he actually feels like they need to spend more money, but it's what does that statement say to the rest of the team? Well, you guys aren't good enough. Oh, we're not good enough, hey? You go on vacation, we'll show you then. Yeah. We'll see who's good enough. Like, to me, it's just kind of a shot at his own team and his own teammates who, you know, like all good teams do, go through a bit of a slump midway through the season, and they're going to pull out of it, and they're going to be just fine, and we'll probably see a three-peat, right, of Cavaliers-Warriors in the finals again.
Yeah, to me, so you're taking it as a motivational thing, like he's doing this. I'm taking it as if maybe it's that way, but I think he legitimately wants them to go grab like Carmelo Anthony or somebody and make a difference. And the thing that bothers me about that is you have guys on this team like Kevin Love who would be superstars and dominant players scoring 30 points a night who willingly doesn't and chooses to just play defense and rebound for you. When you say stuff like this, I get upset about it. I can understand why Kevin Love and LeBron James don't get along because Kevin Love has willingly taken a back seat to try and win a championship and did it, and now he's still hearing how they need to get better as opposed to, you know, another way they could get better is change the game where it's not all LeBron and give Kevin Love more opportunities to score. That's another way they could get better.
Well, they seem
but
to
then
be,
it's not centered around LeBron.
Seem to be emphasizing that as they struggle here with how much he's on the court and stuff. But I think from what I've heard and read about, it's more someone like a ball-handling kind of guy, someone to take some of the load away from them, not a big-time superstar, but just to, sort of to add to their team depth And you wonder if ownership does listen, though, and make a move, help him out a little bit.
Well, being LeBron, you have to listen, don't you? Whether you want to
probably
or not, you sort of
idea,
have to.
Yeah.
Christian, we appreciate the call on the Boston Pizza fan line, 780-1290. We'll take a break and come back with Ron and everybody else on the Boston Pizza fan line. Jets win 5-3. Lots to talk about today on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN1290.
Back on the Big Show, TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. Jim Toth, Brandon Ruwicki, and Troy Westwood.
Boys, I'm on March 9th, taking part in a Kinsmen event that's going down at the Stonewall Arena, and they are playing the alumni team of the Montreal Canadiens. How much fun and how cool is that going to be? Going to be real cool. I ran into Mike Keane at the rink yesterday, and I asked him to please not embarrass me. He told me he was going to run me, so it could be
yes.
a little while. But it's going down Peter. March
Stick
9th.
Up.
Tickets are $40. If you'd like more information, go to stonewalkin.com or contact Kerry Henry at 204-467-9618. It's going to be a great event.
Little known fact, Nolan Baumgartner on his phone and had a keychain of Mike Keane's Canadian's profile pic, which had red hair mullet and a full mustache.
Yeah.
And it would surprisingly just appear different spots of the Moose locker room
yes.
throughout the season. Like every 2 weeks, all of a sudden, just frame photo of Keane's picture with the Canadians with a mustache and a full ginger look.
Keener's a beauty. He's a heck of a keeper, huh?
Who?
Keener in soccer.
Is he really?
He played for the provincial team in the under 16 or under 18. I can't remember which, but he was our keeper.
He's a soccer player?
Well, he was a keeper. He was just.
Well,
I think he
was a keeper.
I didn't mean that in a negative way. I'm just saying that was a position. But he used to, you know, go run 5 miles, come back, had the washboard abs. And I think he was just having fun with the boys between hockey, you know?
Yeah, he's always on the tennis and squash courts, too.
Yeah, he's a beauty.
He's an athlete, I guess.
Yeah.
Whatever.
A little bit of athleticism there.
He's another guy at our age that makes you feel like you should be in better shape.
Your age.
My age, yes, yes. Is your brother up, by the way? Has he got a J-O-B yet? Back to the Boston Pizza fan line, 780-1290. Ron, you're on the program. Go ahead.
Happy Fun Friday, guys.
How are you?
Good, you?
Good, thank you.
Awesome. I was listening to NER. They're talking about the defensemen and Morrissey and Trouba. The development and the progress, especially with Morrissey, and we always knew it was Trouba had it, and for the last couple of years, we didn't really see it, but both, like, Trouba coming back has been outstanding. Morrissey, you know, he was injured last year, and a lot of people thought, well, this guy's not going to be coming up into our top four playing defense. I would put no slight against Bufflin, and it's just I don't know what's going on. Early on in the season, I saw Buff go against the end boards, I guess in the opposing side of the ice. He was playing, he was on the offensive, like he wasn't playing offense, but he was up there. And he got hit into, he went into the boards and he came out. And he was holding his arm, or he's doing some. He was in. You could tell that he was in discomfort. I'm just wondering if maybe he might be a little injured, playing through an injury. But that aside, I would put Morrissey and Trouba up before Buff right now. That's how much I've seen from these guys. They've been outstanding, and lots to look forward to. One thing I wanted to touch on is Brian Little. You guys must have seen Lawless in Order there at second period intermission. Gino Retta asked him a question about is Brian Little one of the most underrated centermen, and even with his own organization. And I thought that was a very interesting question. Do you guys think that the organization does not look at Brian Little as one of the top centermen in the league, or even with their own with their own organization. Because from what I've seen from him since he's come back, it's been outstanding, and they should keep Laine, him, and I forget who's the other guy that's on the line.
Ehlers,
yeah,
Ehlers, right? Sorry,
okay.
They've been outstanding.
He's always been underrated, right? Since the arrival of the Jets.
I remember the first year or the second year covering the team, and there was a guy who religiously would tweet at me once a week about how much he disliked Brian Little.
Really?
And I used to say, say he's never going to score 30 goals a year again and all this. And I used to go back with him constantly and going, I'm telling you what this guy does, you will not see on the score sheet. He is one of the most valuable players on this roster. And I think he is underrated in the league, and I don't think he's underrated on the team.
I agree with that.
The one thing they say constantly when he's not in the lineup is what a difference he makes when he gets back. I don't think he's underrated on the Jets. I do think he's underrated in the league, though.
Yeah, I wonder if that's the case anymore. Like it feels like it's been a while, like years where, like, I don't know if can you be the most underrated player
I think
for
by
years?
Fans, maybe. I don't think by players, but quite possibly maybe like to a the diminutive extent of stature.
Like, maybe to the extent of how good he is, I guess, right? Like, I'm assuming other fans hear Brian Little, oh, yeah, good player. But right now, he's tied for 19th in points per game in the NHL this year. So, like, he does the other stuff well, and now it's translated onto the score sheet. And I believe Paul Maurice, when he got injured, called him the team's number one center. He said, we're going to be without our number one center here. So, like, if you're wondering how the organization views him, I think they rate him pretty properly.
And I think it's, you know, with the emergence of Scheifele and Brian Little being the number one center, that's a pretty good internal sort of it's one of those healthy competitions with the old man saying, hey, kid, not so quick. I'm still the top centerman around here, right? That's kind of a good thing.
He's also very unassuming as an individual. Like, he's a quiet guy. I've had some great conversations with him, but he's emphatic that they all stay off the record. Like, he doesn't want to be knowing his views on several things. I remember during the lockout he was here, and I used to talk about things, and he just... You know, if you go off the record with him, he talks about the game and some of his thoughts on the issues of it. But he just doesn't want to be at the forefront just because he doesn't choose to be. He just likes to go about his game and doesn't want to get into the intricacies of the game itself. Although he does have views on it, he's just unassuming himself and a quiet guy. And that's the way he seems to like it. Thanks for the call, Ron. Boston Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290. Steve, you're on the program. Go ahead.
Morning, gentlemen.
Morning.
I really enjoy the six-pack that you guys do every week. I hope when CFL season comes, you turn it into something like a foreplay and do those games as well, because it'd be really entertaining.
The CFL.
Jim doesn't like foreplay, but we'll give it some consideration.
Very well. Segueing into what you did today, I want to throw out some prop bets and an over-under to you, Jets edition.
My mother listens to this.
Number one, of these four Jets players, who does not get protected in the expansion draft? Myers, Trouba, Lowry, or Kopp?
Let me write this down. Myers, Trouba, Lowry, or Kopp. Who does not get protected?
Not get protected. Because they're either 4-4 or 3-8. So one of those four will not be protected depending on which mode they go. I'll throw out the other two in the over-under and then you can discuss. That'll let you go. Number two, if Hutchinson gets sent down, does he get picked off of waivers by another team or not? Third question, does Jacob Trouba sign a contract extension before the expansion draft or not? And my final over-under is, again, with Trouba. Over-under on a long-term contract that he signs. Average value of over $6.75 million or under. And I'll let you guys defeat that.
That's a gooder.
Wow, that's a lot. Thank you for the call there, Steve.
6.7.
If Hutchinson is waived, does he get picked up? I don't think they waive him, actually.
That's not the question.
Oh. What's the question?
If he gets waived, does he get picked up?
Well, what if I don't think he gets waived at all?
That's not the question, though.
why don't we regroup? We'll gather
break,
our thoughts.
And we'll come back. We promise we'll answer, huh?
Yes.
Okay. Got him written down.
All right. We'll do that. We'll take a break and more of your calls. Alan, you're up next and the rest of the Boston Pizza fan line when we come back to the big show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
This is the Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
The iHeartRadio app is where you stream TSN 1290 and hundreds of other radio and digital stations. Check out the Perfect Four menu to customize your listening experience. Your music, your station's always free on the iHeartRadio app. This is The Big Show on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. Jim Tilt, Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki, back to the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290 in just a moment. But back to answer Steve's questions. Who is not protected? Myers, Trouba, Lowry, Kopp.
I had a real interesting conversation with a fan and who presented the idea that maybe they might be looking at a guy like Myers who gets concerned about the injury rate of Myers, take that money if they lose him and put it into a guy that stays a little bit healthy. Hmm. But with that in mind, there's no chance an HE double toothpicks is Trouba. They sure like Lowry. Kopp or Myers, I'll just say.
We have to table that Myers thing for another day. Yeah. That's a really interesting
idea. Well, I'll say they keep him right now just because of his contract, and when he is healthy, they need him. They don't have the depth on the blue line.
JT, if they leave him exposed and Vegas were to grab him, you take that money, bam, go get another.
But it's such small money. For that kind of caliber of a defenseman. His contract keeps decreasing.
The real money, yeah.
It's such a great contract that you don't expose it and you don't have the depth at the position. I think it comes down to Lowry or Kopp. And I don't know. That's tough if Kopp keeps playing well. I know they love Lowry and they keep putting him in every position because they see a bright future for him. I think they leave Adam Lowry unprotected because I think they think Vegas won't take him. I think there'll be other centers that they like more. I think they think Vegas won't take him. I think they think Vegas will find other centers somewhere else.
Thinking too much, man. Okay.
Lowry. They leave unprotected.
I think the Jets think too much of Adam Lowry, and I think they way, way overvalue him. So I would be shocked if they didn't keep him.
So you're not protecting Kopp then? Kopp,
I wouldn't go the way that I think the Jets are going to, but I think Kopp is the one there that's unprotected, just because I think the asset of Trouba I don't think we can discuss that, but Myers as an asset is worth more than Kopp as an asset.
You know, now that I said that, I think George McPhee would like a guy like Adam Lowry down his middle, big physical center guy. But either one I don't think gets picked if they're let go. Hutchinson on waivers, does he clear?
I've been told Doug Wilson liked him to start the season and still likes him, that they'll snatch him.
I hear Edmonton likes him too. Like to take a chance on
him. If two teams like him, then he gets claimed.
He's gone, yeah.
Yeah, so I think he gets claimed as well. Trouba.
Extension before the draft.
Extension before the Vegas draft, expansion draft.
I'd be very surprised.
No way.
I say no, but he does stay here for the 4 years minimum. Trouba gets $6.5 million over or under.
Over, without any question.
If it's a long-term deal, it's going to be
juicy.
I'll say it's over, but not by too much.
I'll say it's under, but not by too much. If he gets a long-term deal, it's about 5.5 to 6 a year.
No, his point total in the last, I think he's got 14 points in his last 16. So I'm like, we all know his value outside of points, but if I'm real intrigued to see in the last 30 what his point total is going to be.
And he's got 2 years after this, guys, of becoming more of a man, like, and more dominant. Look, back up the Brinks. Whatever back up the Brinks adds up to.
Back to the Boston Pizza fan line, 780-1290. Alan, you're on the Big Show. Go ahead.
Good morning, Troy, Brandon, and the Birdman.
What's up, Alan?
Guys? I'm well. How are you?
Very good. I was trying to get on there yesterday, but I had to go. There was a guy that came on that had quite a long stint with you guys, and it was all very, very good. But I was going to make a comment about that breakaway, but we'll leave that. We won't revisit that. I have a couple of one is as far as refs are concerned. Like, everybody that's watched hockey all their lives will have a favorite hockey team. So obviously, those refs that get into the NHL level, they're going to have a favorite team. Do they screen them for such things? Like, would they say, well, this guy liked such and such a team, so he doesn't get to call those games, or what?
I doubt it. You'd like to think that, for Pete's sake, they operate at a professional level in that manner, no?
Well, you would. And the other thing is very concerning, and I know this is very concerning to you, Troy, is the slew foot, which occurred the other night with Marchand.
Yeah.
And he got, what did he get for that, a $10,000 fine?
Yeah.
I think they should get minimum 10-game suspension for that bad boy. And then if they do it again, 20 games. And if they do it a third time, they're done.
I like that, Old Testament thinking, yeah.
That is the worst play in hockey, or one of them anyway. And as far as the goaltending is concerned, I think we made a mistake in the beginning not having a veteran on the, you know, with the team in the beginning. And I know Pav's that veteran. I think they should go out and get a veteran in the offseason. And because Pav's going to be gone, they need to have that. Because look what's going on in Toronto. They got good goaltending there, and so does Edmonton. They went and got Talbot. Toronto went and got Anderson, and that goaltending is really helping that team, those young teams, out big time.
Fair point to make.
Yeah, and those were both gambles. Those were smart gambles that are paying off, because Talbot was a career backup, and Frederick Anderson couldn't get the job done in a very good Anaheim team. Like, those were some risk-reward things that have paid off for both those situations.
And neither had extensive resumes.
And I remember when the Leafs made that trade, it wasn't received very well.
No.
Because they gave up a pretty high pick for a guy that, like you said, had solid numbers, but I don't think anyone really expected what he's pulling off right now in Toronto.
Yeah. He had a rough start to the year, too.
Oh, yeah.
Of all the places to have a rough start, it's Toronto.
It just and the Machan $10,000 fine for the slew foot, just a rough estimation with what he makes before taxes. He makes $12,300 a day. So as I – just a quick thing. Like, that's such a
it's like 20, 50
stupid,
bucks for
right?
us, right?
Yeah, just ridiculous.
Boston Pizza Fan Line, thanks for the call. Alan, 780-1290. Norm, you're on the Big Show. Go ahead.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you doing today?
Good, thanks.
I was going to mention, too, about the reffing, that call that Stewart should have got, never happened, whatever, that led to a goal. That's pretty biased. Can I ask you a
question, though, sir? I thought, in watching it early, I thought Stewie was going to get a penalty because it looked like he was sitting on him.
Didn't it? I don't know. To me, it just looked a bit like the other guy was holding him down.
Okay.
And then and Wheeler, too, there in front of the net with a goalie. I mean, the guy was out of his tree sweat.
Yeah, agree with that.
You know?
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's weird that, like, Winnipeg gets all these weird calls against them. And sure, maybe that one was offside the last goal, but the game really didn't mean anything then.
Well, it salted it away, yeah.
I wish the reffing was better in the NHL. Yeah. To me, that's the weakest part of the NHL. Is the
refereeing?
I would like to see it more consistent, for sure. Like, just from a game to game. Like we talked about that penalty shot at length, and I think six refs call it a penalty shot. I think six refs call it a penalty, and I think six refs don't call anything.
You know, and even like, look at that slashing penalty that was called. You know, the penalty itself, and then the breakaway, and then Carey Fraser comes in with his interpretation of it. And actually, in the rule itself, Rule 61, page 85, that I now know, it says, subjective to the ref's discretion, or something along those lines, leaving all kinds of gray area. If you remove things like that, like, you want as little subjective reasoning involved in calling the game, right? And so that they can enforce things much more razor sharp.
Yeah, and I think, you know what, the NHL would only be a better league if they could straighten that out.
Agreed, yeah.
All right, I'll let you go, guys. Have a good weekend.
Thanks, Norm. We appreciate it.
I think you could say that about all major sports right now.
Yeah, I just find in the NHL, it's just more inconsistent.
But I think it's harder. It's easily the fastest. They're pursuing the smallest thing of any other sport. Like, right? All those things make it the most difficult, probably.
There's that GIF and that video going around of the referee in the Nashville-Columbus game last night going to call a penalty and turning his mic on before he calls it and yelling at a player to F off twice.
F off.
And people are, you know, wondering if that's the proper conduct of an official and why they talk like that. And I understand that. But Mark Stewart told the ref the same thing at the end of that call when he went over to complain about the feet. Like, I know that it's shocking to see
Maurice,
an official
at this
talk
point.
To Maurice has a habit of telling the official
it's a habit.
To go make love to himself. several times. I understand it's shocking to see an official talk like that, and I don't condone it at all. I think officials should have a more balanced demeanor. But that is the way they talk on the ice, and it's not. It's consistent that they go back and forth like that. I don't think it's to that official's point too often, but I'm not surprised it happened, given what the language they hear.
It's always blown me away. I suppose absorbing, like the house I was in, it was an unthinkable thing to drop. You know, I couldn't do that. And then being around soccer, right, always the transition from soccer to hockey and then soccer, hockey, football, those three things, wrestling around, it always blew me away the way athletes, guys could talk to refs in hockey, refs in football, and compare that to refs in soccer. Like, you, if you were to say, and I know this is the official.
You can't swear in soccer.
Boy, you can't swear at all to the ref. And you would never hear a ref talk like that to a player in soccer. I don't like it in either direction, but I suppose if it does exist in both directions, then it waters itself down, I suppose, to some point, and maybe it just makes it that much more hockey and Letterkenny-esque that communication like that is okay. I don't know.
I've been warned and carded in soccer just for swearing in general, not at anybody, just for swearing.
Ooh. I would not do well in soccer.
Well, I didn't either, to be honest with you.
I swear my fair share, so I've never been carded for soccer, but maybe it had more to do with the hack that you levied a few seconds before that.
I don't know about – wow. We're not here for me. We're here for the Boston Pizza fan line, 780-1290. Mark, you're on the Big Show. Go ahead.
Morning, guys.
Morning.
Two things, and then I'll get off the phone and let you say what you think about them. First of that, San Jose, back to the San Jose game. If you agree, I got – all four goals, I wouldn't even put on the goalie. Because, like, you think on the first goal, I think it's a discipline issue how Trouba and Stewart got caught there on the penalty kill for the too many men. That's discipline to me. Then the second goal, you got Ehlers and Enstrom. Enstrom played too soft in the corner to get the puck, and then Ehlers was just floating around at center, not even paying attention to his check behind him. And then you got Laine on that third goal was the same thing where he was just sleeping and not even focusing on his check behind him. And then, of course, the fourth goal on the penalty shot, you know what? It's a 50-50. You really blame a goalie on that one. So now and there. So now the second point I would say, next one is, what do you think about us keeping, Pavlik? Pavlik at the end of the year, just keeping him as a second string, because he's going to be off his contract, and, you know, he'd probably be no problem staying playing for us for base salary, because that's probably all he's going to get playing anywhere else. And then the third item, if you would agree to, that even yesterday's game, it was a discipline issue. Like, we fluked out that game. We didn't deserve to win. The way we were playing, all the breakdowns that we're having, and it's consistent for the last couple of years. So would that be an issue now that our coach, that we need a coach that could, you know, get after these guys and discipline them, and also have the management behind us when these guys aren't playing up to par and not listening? Because the way they're playing, to me, it shows it's a coaching issue also with the veterans, that we're not pulling it together by now. What do you think?
Well, for the San Jose game, Mark, I agree with you. In the four starts Andre Pavlik had, I thought he had a bad goal in each game, the three previous. I didn't blame him for any of the goals against San Jose. I thought it was all poor defensive coverage.
You had two backdoor tap-ins, a breakaway, and a Burns blaster just inside the circle, 5-on-3. None of them were soft goals.
So against San Jose, I didn't think they were any bad goals. The three previous games, I thought he had a weak one in each game. As for keeping him, I just think there's too many factors that are not going to play into it. So I don't think it's going to happen. I think, even if he wanted league minimum, even if the Jets offered league minimum, I don't think he would take it. I think he's got more money waiting for him in Europe, and he probably wants a change himself. And I think maybe even the Jets would like a fresh start. And the direction they're going, I don't think it allows for him to be back. So I just don't think it's happening. And as for discipline, I agree with you. I think it's real interesting watching how other teams deal with this, because you see the Glenn Gullickson in Calgary, and he's also a coach who's put Monahan on the fourth line and cut some ice time. I think it's up to every coach how they handle it, and some coaches are way lenient, some aren't. Some, you know, rule with an iron fist and demote ice time. I know that the discipline to me is still, I think, a concern with the Winnipeg Jets, And how they go about in handling it, I don't know. The past couple of games I've seen, it's been the younger players. The start of the year, it was the veteran players. If you could sort of shell it all up and clear it up, I think it would benefit the team. That's the obvious answer. How you go about it with this core and these young players, I don't know. I've never had a problem with pulling ice time or sitting down veterans as if they needed it to be.
Remember the playoff year? All the penalties, and Paul Maurice was like, hey, I'm okay with that. They just absorbed them, stayed nasty, tenacious out there. You can do that if, I believe they were 11th that year in penalty kill off the
they
top of my head.
Top 10 basically top 10, the whole okay. season, but yeah, then I think they faltered at the end.
So long as you have a strong penalty kill, right, that makes the penalties a little easier both for fans and for coaching and management to absorb. But when you're 27th in the league, that sure brings that much more attention to it. The discipline issue is a real interesting question. And the answer to it, it's something – I don't know that it haunts the team at this point in time. Like, I think that they have been better as of late, but it is a concern going forward, especially when you're talking about – like it's a full-blown trend at this point, right? This point in time for the last 2-3 years.
It's interesting how, like, I think when we did this a month to 5 weeks ago, it was, I think the league average was just under 3 a game and the Jets were just over 3. It's amazing how one less penalty can make a difference in a game. Just one less minor.
And the thing is, it's I always find that a fascinating part of studying the stats in the NHL. Because even for face-off wins sometimes with teams, it's like a difference of 2 or 3 wins a game.
Yeah.
But all those little things, when you're talking about elite-level sport, all those little 2%, 3%, 1%, all of that stuff adds up to winning and losing.
It's like playoff hockey. When you get into the games itself, there are so many games that it's literally one intricacy of the game that made the difference throughout a 60-minute battle. Thanks for the call, Mark, on the Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290. We'll take a break and come back and take up more of your calls as we wrap up a Friday show on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on The Big Show, TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki, and your phone calls on the Boston Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290. Bob, you're on The Big Show. Go ahead.
Hi, Jim.
Oh, hi, Bob. How are you?
Very good, thanks. How are yourself?
I find myself well today.
Excellent. Hi, Troy. Hi, Brandon.
Bobby.
Oh, sir.
I just two quickies, you guys. Would profane language be worthy of a 10-minute misconduct in, you know, the real world?
Real world?
Well, I mean to say, if we were to look on hockey, how we would want it to be officiated, wouldn't a guy using bad language be worthy of a 10-minute misconduct?
Like Bobby, maybe in the stands?
Bobby, I would like, you know, being a little bit old school in what I think respect and all the rest of it should be and just a day-to-day life for all of us walking this planet, I would love that to be so.
I would, too.
An unthinkable thing for an official to speak to a player like that and then a considerable punitive thing for a player or coach to do to an official,
I mean, you can't even really use it in – you're not supposed to talk like that even in public, you know, when you're even in a store or something. And my second question is, Trevor was saying that Connor Hellebuyck has trouble with straight-on shots. And I was just wondering, could it be something really simple, like he might be lacking 20/20 vision or something? Or would that, in their athletic world, would that be all like...
Now, Bobby, the only thing I would say to that, and I know Trev said that, and he said that most of the goals happen when you get a goalie moving laterally and stuff like that, but I wouldn't mind having a full conversation with Trevor Kidd about this because the vast majority of goals, I mean, look at the game winner last night. You got Brian Little flying inside of home plate. He's at the, very similar to where Perlini was in that first goal against Arizona and Hellebuyck, but Little is there inside the circle and rips it high over Darling's shoulder. The vast majority of goals you see in this day and age of the NHL is the goalie being in a similar position like that and getting beat either high short side or high, like, pick your shoulder, whichever's got a bigger window there.
So it's, it, vertical you're saying is it's such velocity the players could put on a puck now that at some point the goaler has no chance?
Yeah, it's not even velocity, it's the precision of the shot. I've only seen one goalie in all the games I've watched this year make a save for a shot over his shoulder, and it was Corey Schneider against the Jets, made a brilliant glove hand save with that. Unless it hits the goalie's shoulder there, they don't have a chance to make a stop.
Wow. Well, you know, of course, it's always a pleasure. I'll let you go, but let you guys go. But I did want to say, I myself have had LASIK surgery, and my vision, I can see like a hawk.
Yeah, I know a lot of people love it, huh? It just works fantastically.
Yeah, I don't think it's vision, and I happen to agree with Trevor Kidd. I think there are shots that he's just an inch or two somewhere, and stuff that he doesn't, that he's working on. And I think it's more mental, like Trevor says too. I will tell this funny story though. I used to play slow pitch in Grand Prairie, Alberta, with an East Coast Hockey League player named Jason Duda. And he was a high scoring guy in junior. I think he got drafted, never made the show, played some AHL, and then had a long career in Wichita in the East Coast Hockey League. And he told me one summer that part of his next contract in Wichita was to get LASIK eye surgery because his lowest point total that year was, while sitting on the bench, he could not read the advertising on the boards at the other end of the ice. And he's played from the bench. And he played the whole season that year, was a guy who would put up like 80 points a year in the East Coast League, put up like 45, and said that part of his next contract was them paying for his LASIK surgery. Then he played another 4 or 5 years where he scored like 110 points a year for Wichita in the East Coast Hockey League. Jason Duda, look it up. It's a great vision story as we wrap up here on The Big Show, TSN 1290. Hey, are you afraid of John Wick? Well, you're not afraid enough to go see Chapter 2. We have a double invite to TSN 1290's advanced screening of John Wick, Chapter 2, 780-1290 to kick off your weekend. Thanks for listening. It's been a great week. We appreciate all the calls, tweets, and you taking the time to make us a part of your day. On behalf of Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki, and Jim Toth, we'll be back Monday morning at 6 on The Big Show on TSN 1290 and tsn1290.ca.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.